Here's what I do.
Oh, so your kids are out of school, right?
Currently, yes.
Oh. Currently? What does that mean? They're going back in?
At some point.
Okay.
They don't get out that easy.
Do they have summer?
I didn't get out that easy. They don't get out that easy.
Oh. Are you sending them to summer camp?
No. They're with their grandparents right now, actually.
Oh, that's how you did it. Free babysitting with the grandparents.
Well, they went to SeaWorld.
Oh. Aren't they always... Don't you guys go there, like, weekly, practically?
SeaWorld? No.
Why not?
I don't know. Why can I not do a PNG 24 transparent?
PNG non-transparent? What is with PNGs all of a sudden? What's wrong with
I've used them before they were hip.
I don't use those.
Because they, you know why? Because they're lossless. Well, they're...
What do you mean they're lossless?
They're less lossy. As far as the web is concerned, they're easier to scale. They scale better.
Well, for web stuff, we're always getting them now for print stuff.
They're pretty... Well, I mean, you'd know better than me, but they seem to be pretty clean for...
See, I go with TIFFs because they're not compressed.
Well, that's true, too, yes. But that's because you're smart.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Or at least you know something about printing.
Yeah, yeah. But as far as PNG, yeah, if you're using web stuff, then that's okay.
Index
but...
transparency. Okay, there, got that.
What are you trying to make a transparency of?
I'm trying to set something up for a lower third for video. But for whatever reason, I can't get a 24 no transparency. I mean, transparency. Sorry, index transparency is what I'm trying to get.
Oh.
But it's not letting me do it. It's only letting me do 8-bit or whatever PNG 8 is.
Well, you don't want to hire 8-bit. You don't want to hire bit rate because that becomes unstable.
And then you got to call in, what's that guy's name? Keen Ivory Wayans. No, Keen, the guy from the one, the Matrix. Yeah, him. Because he comes
Lawrence
in.
Lawrence Fishburne?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's who
you
I
don't,
meant.
You don't want him helping you out. Because
then he comes in and saves
all,
the day.
He'll be all on your ass going, why don't you use a TIFF, motherfucker?
No, that's Samuel.
I said Lawrence.
Samuel Jackson. That's the guy who makes beer, right?
That's Sam Adams.
That's what I said.
And he'd be all, ye olde, why are you using PNG? And ye should use ye old TIFF-y file.
Exactly.
That's my old Englishy type.
Right, let's see if this works this time.
Is this for work?
No, absolutely not. Why is it?
Is it for the Unique Geek? A new logo?
It's not a new logo. I'm just trying to create the lower third for Ed. But. I think what's happening is it's decided that it's already loaded this file once, so it's not going to load it again, so it's still wrong.
Yeah.
So I'm going to...
Your code is messed up.
And exit. Now I'm going to go back into it.
That's the thing to say. Your code is messed up.
I don't make messed up code.
That's what she said.
Choose a file.
So why does Ed need this for the lower third? It sounds like British school or something. The lower third.
It's like a bug, a news bug. You know, like a little thing down at the bottom that...
What's wrong with using a GIF? Everybody uses GIFs.
Oh,
nobody
it still
reads that
is wrong.
Stuff anyway. What?
No, it's for his name. It says his... It's still... What the heck is going on here? Why is this not wanting to...
Is this for his signature saying or something?
It's for a video thing.
Oh, I can't help you with that. After all that, I can't help you. You're on your own. I'm sorry, Ed, doesn't sound like it's going to work.
It's going to.
Does it move? Is it a picture of Ed moving?
No, it's just a... Here, I can send a little...
I won't look at it. You know that. Well, just don't bother. Gosh, where is everybody? We're supposed to talk about stuff.
And things.
And things. Hey, do you know who the alt history guy is? I need to contact them.
Yes, if you go back and listen to episode... Hold on, let me find it for you. TheUniqueGeek.com, first of all, I'll go there.
Uh-huh.
There aren't very many podcasts since the 50 Days of Dragon Con, so it should be pretty easy to find.
Really? You didn't even do after Dragon Con?
No, there is one since then. We are probably going to try and work on a second one here shortly. Right. Let's see if I can... So far, there's two of us.
Woo.
There's the Help Me Rocks that was day 49.5.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Well, I had a lot of point fives.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't think to round up?
Well, but then it would go into the next day. So.
What are we talking about?
50 Days of Dragon Con. Wow, you sound horrible, dude.
I know.
Hello?
Yeah, what are you on?
I'm on my podicus, normal.
No.
On your podicus? Yeah. Is that what you said?
What?
Yeah.
I'm on my regular microphone.
Oh. Mm.
I think you have internet problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hang on a second.
It says PNG files.
All right. Is that any better?
Not really. It's a little better. Hi. Right?
Hey, Tuffly.
Well, Rox is in a wind tunnel. Why is that?
Oh, I think it's just
there's
she
a
is.
Fan.
Oh. You have a fan of yours just standing by fanning you, is that what it is?
That's right. That's how it All works right. here.
All right, hang on. Let me just try to restart my router. I don't know what else to do. One second.
Hey, what's new with you, Tuffly?
Well, I don't feel like shit anymore, so that's always good.
Oh, that's good.
I'm beginning to wonder if it is me. Cause he's
oh, hey, weird. So are you going to jump ship? Or you guys, so you have an Xbox and a PlayStation, right?
We do, yeah.
So are you going to still stay with the two console family?
Well, you know, no matter what happens with the current gen consoles, we still have a 360 and a PS3.
Okay.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean... I can't figure out.
I'm beginning to think it is me.
I think so.
Is it you?
You're now breaking up.
Me?
Yes. You're breaking up.
I didn't mean to break up. The letter wasn't intended to do that.
Let's see.
John. John is in his PNG files.
I've closed everything, so. All right, I think I'm going to reboot my router as well.
All right. Call us back.
It requires everyone going bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The internet is reestablished. Oh, just a moment. We're improving your Skype experience. Awesome. Yeah.
And we're back, I think.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, you can hear me now?
No, you're breaking up again.
What?
Oh, no, you're fine again.
What?
Now you're breaking up again. It might be your inflection. Try not inflecting so much.
Okay.
Better. Scott, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Are we having issues?
No, actually, you sound great.
Why, thank you. Oh, then we just lost Rox.
No, the call just failed.
Oh, I see.
Do you have a sore throat? Something's wrong with you.
I'm trying to do sexy voice and I'm failing miserably. I'm sorry.
You're like partway between movie trailer guy and Marge's sisters on The Simpsons.
How close do you live to Widge?
Who, me?
Yes.
I think
45 minutes.
Yeah, about 45 minutes to an hour. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was wondering if you're in the same
neighborhood.
Yeah,
that's what I was
him.
Told. Everything in Atlanta is 45 minutes away.
Well, Scott, as you all know, that actually turned into about an hour and 15 minutes the last time we did a game night. We were literally stuck on 285 like an hour in like one spot.
Oh, I know. When I was driving in, I was stuck for a bit on getting onto 85.
Yeah.
I mean, just traffic just stopped, and it's like, isn't this like a major highway? What's taking so long? So, no, I know. Everybody said that weekend was ridiculous when it came to traffic.
Yeah, part of it was the construction on 285 past the perimeter, and then it backed everything up.
There she is.
Then, well, okay.
Rock.
How's that?
You sound fine. Scott? Okay.
Well, you already know I sound fabulous.
Oh my gosh! What, did you get a new mic?
Yes.
Huh.
Yes, I got a sexy, sexy mic.
We don't. Yeah, but what about you're doing with your mic?
What about your audio equipment?
Ba-dum-bum.
I missed you.
Oh, we're just calling.
All right, is that any better?
Yes.
Yes. Hi.
Okay. Hi. I have no idea how long I will be on because I've tried calling like three times and it keeps bouncing me off. I have no idea what the fuck's happening.
Well, I did reboot Skype there because I was beginning to think it was me because Tuffley was having the same problem. But then Scott and Rox were fine.
No. My entire internet kept bouncing. So.
Oh.
I'm just troubled.
I'm sorry.
Now, when it bounced, was it like a big bounce? Or, I mean, how far did it go up?
Well, I don't think there was an up. I think that was the problem. If there was an up, Widge would have been on the call.
No, he would have had like 1,000 balloons tied to his house.
Were they red balloons?
Ooh. Scott, what is this mic you're
perhaps
using?
There are really
it's
only 99
a good
of them.
Mic.
It is a MXL 990 UBS. USB.
USB.
Sorry.
I was going to say UBS is a little weird.
UBS.
Yes, MXL 990.
That's a bank.
So you're using a bank?
I own some of that.
MXL 990 is what I use, except it's not USB. It's unbalanced.
Yeah, but you're actually using a board, right?
Well, that's perfect that for you because you are unbalanced.
Uh-huh.
But you're actually using a board, right?
Who, me or John?
John.
He's using a PNG file.
Let's make out sometime.
Bounce.
Aaron, there's other people on this call. I'll talk with you later.
I'm saying it to all of you. Let's make out. Name the place, baby.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. John, bump and grind, R. Kelly, go. My mind is telling me no. My body is telling me yes.
Oh, my God.
I've been drinking Long Island iced tea. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. Before we get started, you want to switch to a better mic there?
I totally switched. Oh, you're not here. Hold on. Can you hear this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm on the good mic.
I'm eating a donut. I don't care.
Whoa! There you go.
That sounds like a man who knows what he's talking about.
That's a man who knows his donuts.
Oh, shit!
Oh, this is going to be great. We know. Mm-hmm. All right. So what are we going to talk about first? Because Game of Thrones is now over. I finally watched the Doctor Who finale. John, I'm not done with following yet. I'm sorry.
No story for you then.
I'm that is next, John. That is totally next. I just knew that we were going to talk Game of Thrones and Doctor Who's, and I was only one or two episodes away on both of those, so I had to do those. But any takers? Anyone want to go first?
You're up to date on both, are you?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I have finished both seasons.
Okay. Good.
Can we talk Game of Thrones?
Yeah, sure. No.
Hey, it came up number one as the number one most downloaded, illegally downloaded show.
Oh, it's done it several times. But
whatever.
Rock's Top Gear isn't back yet.
The question I have is, why did they end the season why didn't they end it with the Red Wedding?
Because they did that last year. Remember last year?
Seems like
year?
The logical spot. I guess you're right. Yeah.
Last year. Remember last year when I was dismayed at the fact that it was a finale, you know, season finale. And it didn't seem like, it's like, oh, what is this recappy crap? Because the exciting part was the whole attack on King's Landing, Green Fire. Oh my God, that's amazing. And then it was like recap hour the next year, the next week. And I'm like, that was the, and then we're just like, it was the season finale. I'm like, was it? It just, they did that again.
I mean, to be fair,
a clip show with Tyrion and a couple of people, you know, eating cheesecake around the kitchen while they were talking about that fun they had that one time. Yeah, that's going to suck.
Yeah.
Well, no, wait a minute.
No, it did end with the blonde chick and the people thing, but you kind of knew that was coming anyway, so.
Yeah. Mm.
It was weird when they showed the Lannisters eating shawarma.
Yeah. Yep. That was kind of funny.
That bit where they pan over and the whole thing was a therapy session with Banner? Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Wow.
But I think Widge wanted to defend him.
Well, what am I defending? Wait, I'm sorry. What's happening?
Were you defending their choice for season finales?
Well, I didn't like the second season closer so much because it just seemed so cliffhangery with basically the zombies marching on the fist, you know, which sounds ruder than it is.
We're going to war. We're going to war. Some more war. Yeah, there you go.
But I think basically if you had done, considering the reaction to the Red Wedding.
Oh, people lost their shit all over the internet about that.
But it was funny that have read the books.
Well, and as somebody pointed, as more than one article has pointed out, that book came out in 2000.
Uh-huh.
So the fact that those of us
who read it. Long, man.
No, I know, but the fact that nobody said, oh, just fucking wait till the Red Wedding. It was everybody who watched the show was pretty much caught flat-footed on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Toughly, who ruined it on me before I got to watch it.
Toughly, what did you do?
What did I?
You ruined Robb Stark's death on me. Because there's a 24-hour gap between when you guys get to see the episode and when we get to see it. You see it Sunday night and I see it Monday night. And Tuffy just posted, you guys, you know Rob's going to regenerate in the next series. And I was like, oh, I know he dies, you bastard.
Well, see, here's the thing. It wasn't even, because I don't even watch, but I knew that that was about to happen. But the thing was, I hadn't seen the episode and I didn't know it was going to be that week.
Oh, so you just ruined it without giving a fuck. That's much better.
No, I didn't know it was going to be that week. I just went for a Doctor Who joke. Because it was the same week the Matt Smith news came out, and I'm like, Rob's regenerating.
Well, John Hurt's going to play Robb Stark anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey,
it's all there. He's the 15th Robb Stark.
So, Widge. Widge. So, yes. I saw this article in The Onion, so you're never quite sure whether or not it's true or not.
Go on.
Wow.
It was supposedly by George R.R. Martin, but I couldn't quite tell.
Oh, God. What is it?
Nothing on the onion is real, John. Nothing.
And basically, he's writing that, you know, that the whoever wrote this actually was brilliant because.
Oh, nice.
You see what I'm saying? You reading it?
Yes, that's fantastic.
He's like, he even was surprised by it. He goes, that book was a long time ago. That's I don't fantastic. Remember any of this.
Well, the thing was, I saw him on Conan. Like, they had him on Conan, like, the Monday or Tuesday after the episode. And he said the only thing he felt guilty about was putting the actors out of work.
Yeah.
That's considerate.
But that was such a nice, sweet old man who's really psychotic.
But, I mean, we said this last year, you know, about the, you know, for those of us that have read it, it's like, well, you know, these are really fine actors. Same thing with Boardwalk Empire, because these are shows that do not mind bumping people off. These are people that will get jobs. I mean... Well,
and the other caliber
that these people are acting is really amazing.
Well, and the other thing, too, is unlike Boardwalk Empire, there's books. You know when you're going to die. So you can make plans.
But and also, I mean, haven't they already set the template of, you know, you can't really, you know, whoever you like is going to probably die soon? Haven't they already set up that pattern?
Well, what the one thing Martin said in an interview, which I think... hopefully he'll start fucking with, is the reason why he subverts he makes a point of subverting expectations, which is why you had, Ned Stark's going to be the protagonist. No, fuck you, he's not. Oh, well, you know, this prophecy for Khal Drogo's son is going to come true, and they're going to, oh, no, it's not. Oh, well, Robb Stark's going to be the hero of the, oh, no, he's not. So at a certain point, if he's not careful, it turns into an M. Night Shyamalan thing where you go, okay, what would subvert the expectations? Oh, the village isn't in the past. It's actually in the present day.
Oh, is that what that was?
From the trailer? What?
I didn't know that's what that was.
Not in Game of Thrones.
Robb Stark's been dead the whole time.
Hey, I knew that tower was modern, okay? The fence.
No, Rob can't be Sharon Tate. Oh, wow. Sorry, wrong show. Wrong show.
Too soon, Tuffley.
Wow.
I'm sorry, wrong show.
Jesus. My point about the reaction to the Red Wedding was, I think you had to have an episode after that because I think that gives the people a chance to come back, and you do get to have the biggest finale of that you've had thus far, because now everyone goes, I'm sorry, what? I gotta fucking watch this show now. And that gets them in, as opposed to if they have to wait for season 4, which would be what? When would that be? Like January or something? When was that? I don't know.
Probably what? April?
Yeah. April. So that strategically gives them a way to get people, you know, give them an episode to recover, basically, because it's pretty fucked up. I knew it was coming and it was fucked up to watch. I mean, even knowing, it's still fucked up. But to me, it wasn't a recap show. It was like, here's where everything is, so we can now leave it for a season. And I was fine with it. And you had some really great, oh, what the hell is happening now? Like, you know, Bran going off beyond the wall. You have Jaime's now back. You've got all this shit happening.
Arya still with the Hound. Which, she is amazing as a young actress.
Yes.
Because she's been amazing playing against two older men really, really well.
Well, like,
and including her little compatriots that, like, dispersed as well. Her storyline and her as an actress, she's going to, you know, I hope she goes far, really.
Well, Rox, you remember the thing when they cast her that made me go, holy shit, where do they find her? About her learning to sword fight?
Yeah.
She's right-handed, but she learned it left-handed because Arya's left-handed?
Yes.
How fucking, and this I think was not this episode, but maybe it was the episode before that. Where she basically tells the Hound, one day I'm going to stab you in the eye all the way to the back of your skull, whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was like the most deceptively simple delivery. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even you could see it on the hound's face, like, oh shit.
Right. Yeah. This girl is amazing. I mean, out of all the children actors in this show, she is showing a real breadth of, you know, an actor's skill. I mean, more so than the chick playing Sansa. You know, and Sansa,
I think people underestimate Sansa, though.
I have, but you know, the whole she does. Now knowing her situation of being just a full-fledged pawn in a really big game that she just does not understand, the last couple episodes, I've kind of turned around on her. You know, that, you know, she's growing. You know, before it was like, I'm the spoiled brat, I'm going to be the princess, blah, blah, blah. And her mom, you know, it's like, okay, her mom didn't do any justice for her at all. But now she's in the full, you know, mess of it, and I'd like to see her, you know, do well or come out unscathed as much as possible.
As much as possible.
Yeah.
Even if she just had a week where she wasn't shot on.
Nice. Oh, I know. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's brutal as well, because basically this last episode she had that moment where she was really like talking to Tyrion, and they were both just understanding who they were, both of them pawns in this scenario, and then she finds out about the Red Wedding. Mm-hmm. And it was great because they didn't say anything, he could just see it on her face. That was all that was necessary. And was really well done. Sansa, God love her as a character, but God, I mean, Jesus, nobody's having a good time. except maybe Tywin. And can I just say, Charles fucking Dance, ladies and gentlemen. He is fucking amazing. It's like, if you'll please pardon me, I'm in the scene, therefore I must rule it. I mean, which is Tywin. I mean, he's
which perfect. The funny thing is the closest he's ever come to like not winning was the one up against, you know,
Diana Rigg. Yes, that was a brilliant scene.
That was an awesome scene.
That if that scene hadn't been in there, they would have had to invent it, you know.
Oh,
it
yeah.
Like, it's like the scene in the first season, which again was my favorite, which was the added scene, which wasn't in the books, of Mark Addy and Lena Headey sitting down and actually talking like human beings.
Yes.
Human beings who are so over it, you know.
Yep.
But I have been really kind of, I mean, it took a couple of episodes to get back up and running, but I think they did really well. And I was fine with the final episode, because like I said, you've got to leave it somewhere where you actually can let it sit for, you know, close to a year while you go and fucking do the next season. So, and you've got a bunch of shit. If where they left it, that means season 4 incorporates a lot of really amazing shit from the books. So I'm happy. Hell, I think it's great.
I'm actually going to a Game of Thrones exhibit on Saturday. They're showing it in Belfast where they film a lot of the scenes.
Oh, nice.
They've brought over a lot of the costumes and the props, and they're bringing the throne as well.
Nice.
Oh my God, Aaron, can you get a picture of yourself on the throne for Derelict?
I can definitely
get a picture.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
No, I'm definitely getting a picture taken. I'm already trying to pick out what clothes I'll wear, because I feel like you can't rock up on the throne in a tracksuit. You know what I mean?
No.
You have to wear some sort of like appropriate clothing.
Oh God.
Well, I don't know. It could be an interesting mashup between Game of Thrones and The Sopranos.
Oh, no. Ollie G.
Oh, Aaron. Oh, my God. What you need to do is I would bring change to the clothes. Like, I would get up there in, like, a walk-around character chicken outfit from a restaurant and sit on the throne. I would get up there in, like, and sit up there in, like, beach wear with, like, you know, just in trunks with, like, flip-flops and a beach towel. And
maybe a Scooby-Doo costume.
Oh, Scooby-Doo, that's fantastic. But yeah, in the beach cut, and you're smearing suntan lotion on yourself. I mean, the possibilities are fucking endless for that.
Yeah.
That is genius. Oh. So, So
you can't half-ass it. If you're on the game, if you're on the throne of swords, you can't half-ass it.
No, you can't. It's got to be an amazing picture.
Are you going to be sending like Kanye tweets while you're doing this?
Wow, that's awesome. And the other thing I want to know is, are they going to have the severed head collection there just to prove? Oh, look, it's Ned Stark.
Totally wasn't George Bush.
Oh, God! Here's what I would do. Here's what I would do is I would have the spike set up with the prop heads. And then what you do is you have a section where you can put your head through a hole. And so you make a face like you're stuck on a spike. So you can be on the wall. That would be great. No, no one else?
Yes, I want to simulate being on a pike now.
No, I just want Ari as I don't want Sansa to watch as I'm headless on the pike. That's the thing.
You pervert.
You just want her to watch.
You know what really surprised me? That I found out that Sansa, the actress who plays Sansa and the actress who plays Arya, they're only a year apart.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. You'd think there'd be a much bigger difference in age, but Sansa's only a year older than Arya in real life.
Wow.
So, somewhat of a segue. Did anybody see the Venture Brothers premiere?
Yeah, oh. I'm the second episode, too.
Yeah. The premiere episode had the Monarch attempted Game of Thrones role playing.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Okay, yes. It's find the clip on Adult Swim. It's actually very, very funny. Dr. Girlfriend gets confused and does the wrong thing.
That could mean anything in the Game of Thrones world.
Come to me, my Khaleesi. Exactly.
Oh, wow. Nice. Here. Okay, I'll find that. I will definitely find that.
Sit on my iron throne.
Okay.
On my iron throne.
So here's a question. The sellsword guy, Dario, right? Who has just joined Daenerys' merry band. Is it just me? Let's see who reacts to this. This will be the true geek.
Is this sexy
test.
Ninja warrior guy?
Yes. Is it just me, or was he designed by Bart Sears?
Who?
Wow.
I know a lot of people who have, like, because he's kind of like sleazy, but like in a weirdly nice, smiley way. A lot of people said that they can't trust him and they expect him to be like a double crossing kind of guy. But I just reckon he'll be the next, like, the queen's husband, because he won't be king theoretically.
Consort.
Yeah, like how the Duke Philip. I know you guys have read it, so I'm just talking to the wall at this point.
I haven't read it, so.
Yeah,
I don't read.
For me and you, John.
Yes. In fact, my wife has read them, and so I ask her often, "Is this what happened in the book? Is this what happened in the book? Is this what happened in the book?"
Yeah, so, my girlfriend's like a speed reader, so like in the break between this season and the next season, she'd probably have all the books read.
So here's the thing. Since on the Conan O'Brien show, they showed the clips of everybody who has read the books, and they've never divulged anything about the Game of Thrones. And yet they've waited all season long to photograph their loved ones watching this episode.
And freaking the fuck out.
And freaking the fuck out. I mean, that is kind of funny. And I guess it's, you know, nerds waiting for a very long time for revenge or something.
No, it's just that they know how to play a long game. And obviously they've read the books. So there you go.
I did like Jon Stewart's thing on The Daily Show where he did a Red Wedding reference. And the audience reacted and he went, "Oh, come on, read the books." That was nice. But I think it's basically, you know, it's you got caught flat-footed when you read the books and it happened. I mean, John and Aaron, you guys didn't know John Aaron. Oh my God. John, sorry. You guys didn't know it was coming, right?
Absolutely no idea. In fact, I was going to mention that my
your wife videotaped you freaking out.
No, it was she was videotaping me for something else. But the
Were you on the throne?
It dawned on me while we were watching the season finale. I was like, wait a minute. Did you know this? The Red Wedding was coming? And she goes, yeah. Like, and you didn't bother to tell me? No. Okay. All right,
well,
let's see where we are.
I didn't know if I didn't read Tuffley's tweets.
Well, but there's a difference between Rob being dead and what happened. Because what happened is pretty fucking dire.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought it would be more so in, like, a big battle or something when they were there attacking Casterly Rock or something like that. I didn't think it was kind of – the way it was surprising. No, I was quite surprised.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to spoil that. That was actually a Doctor Who joke. Sorry.
Well, and here's the part that most people don't get. this is just a tip for people who are trying to avoid spoilers for other people. If you say – I know everyone is really cautious about people who die, but especially on a show like Game of Thrones, where you say something like, and I'm not saying this, but let's say I were to say something like, oh, well, wait in season 7 when you see what happens to Tyrion. Guess what you've just spoiled? The fact that he doesn't die. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't die. I'm just saying that if you were to say that, then suddenly you've
But
got,
if you were saying that.
If I was actually saying that, then you've gone in the other direction. So just be cautious.
Well, I think at this point, it's the type of show that, like, I think everybody's learned that anything can happen.
Well, and the one piece that was different, I mean, you guys know that Mrs. Robb in the books wasn't actually there and wasn't pregnant. So what they did was, now this is really interesting, the opening death was the one that surprised us, where we went, we knew it was probably going to happen because she was there, but still watching it was just like, fuck, oh my God.
Although of all the comments on it, the best one that I feel like related to me about this was that someone had mentioned, this should make people rethink hiring a band for their Game of Thrones themed wedding.
Yeah.
Oh my. Okay. Now,
get a DJ.
Can I just say that this is why from the beginning, anyone who has done a Game of Thrones wedding, all of us went,
there was that one at DragonCon.
Yes! Where I was why would you do that?
I was told that the drummer from Coldplay was in the band at that wedding on the TV show.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't spot him the first time around, but I need to try and watch it again to see if I can catch him.
Okay. I think he's like an extra in the scene or something.
Yeah, I think he was part of the band.
Yeah,
at the wedding. Yeah,
I had heard that too.
We need to keep an eye out for him.
So
Coldplay really does kill.
Wow!
Sorry.
And I mean, again. Even knowing what was going to happen, it was still like watching them kill Grey Wind was like, oh, damn. And then it wasn't over, because then the finale episode, you get to see them with Rob with the wolf's head. That was fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, again, reading about it is bad enough, but then when you actually see it and you're going, oh, damn, that was, and then Arya's watching it. You're just like, Arya, you are the queen of being in the wrong place at the wrong time, my sweet. Oh,
obviously, television therapy for Arya and Sally Draper on just wheel it over, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God! You know what? That I would Kickstarter a nice 30-minute, just a one-on-one chat between the two of them.
Here's the thing: like, I don't get, like, I mean, with Theon Greyjoy. There's no happy ending for him. So I just feel like this is being dragged out as torture porn at this point.
Well, part of it, you know, I was concerned about that as well. I think that they have, in the books, basically he just sort of disappears and then you join him much, much later. And I think, bad things are happening. But I was reading about it, and it makes sense where, because you've got the actor, you don't necessarily want to
just get rid of him for a while.
Just get rid of him for a while. And I mean, it does, the payoff does come at the end where you know, it's revealed why they've kept him, which makes sense. And the whole point is they were just waiting for the right moment to start sending boxes, which is fucked up. Don't get me wrong.
I do like you felt like it necessary to say, and bad things happen in Game of Thrones. I was like, we know, but everything's going to be bad.
Yeah, it's all pretty bad. I did like how they kept it a secret who was doing it and why it was happening, because it was a sort of, you were sort of there with Theon going, what the fuck is going on?
Kind of twig pretty early though that it was who it was, because I really did feel like, you know, who else would have been sent to take a look at him, you know what I mean?
Right. Although it is really hilarious to I don't know if any of you guys have watched any of Vicious, the Ian McKellen, Derek Jacobi sitcom, where he's the friendly upstairs neighbor.
can someone explain to me who he was? Because I still didn't catch on to who he was.
Okay. It's revealed by Roose Bolton when he's talking to Walder Frey.
Yeah, I figured that, but I don't know who he is.
That's what I was about to say.
But who is he?
Hang on. I'm going to tell you, John. Fucking shut up.
But I want to know what the guy's purpose is, who he is.
Oh. He's the angel of death.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
All right.
You're saying you want to know who he is.
No, seriously. Who is he?
He's Roose Bolton's bastard son, who he sent to grab Theon and hold on to him. But as he said in the conversation, Ramsay has his own way of doing things.
Who's Roose Bolton?
The guy who stabbed Rob in the chest.
Yeah, I got
the guy who betrayed him.
Okay, but how does he lay out as far as who he is in a grander scheme?
Okay, well, he was one of the spoilers.
Oh, okay, well.
Well, he was one of the Northmen, and he was on Rob's side, but he got paid off by the Lannisters, and now he's like the Marshal of the North.
Right. He was the one who was sitting next to Kat, and Kat saw that he was wearing chainmail and twigged what was going on.
Right, but what I'm trying to get at, and I guess you alluded to it, is that there is a deeper story there, correct? Or is that just it? He just did it for money?
Yeah, well, basically that, and as he revealed... John, did you watch the episode? Because I'm just curious.
Yes. No,
he says, well, he didn't listen to me at every turn. And basically the implication is if he hadn't been so fucking, Rob hadn't been such a fucking bullheaded, well, now wolf-headed, idiot, that Roose might have stuck with him. Because Roose is a kind of person who is like, I just want to be on the winning side. This is obviously not going to be you. Therefore, let me cut and run.
By the way, John, it's not just the money. He does get checks for free. Thank you.
You said he get checks for free, but does
you're
he chicks?
Here all week.
Yes. Stipulators.
We heard you, Scott. You don't have to sigh anymore.
I'm just practicing in case something happens.
Fellas.
What?
Oh, so how does everyone like the way the Baratheon turnaround works out? The Baratheons. What? Stannis turnaround to go north.
Well,
I mean, why did it take him so long? It's like, oh, hey, I have this note I could have shown you like 10 minutes ago.
Okay, first of all, people don't communicate in Game of Thrones.
No, they do not. I have a note. I need to go run off.
Like,
oh, let me go see this kid. And then I go back and, oh, hey, we have this note from a crow that took forever.
You may have noticed that. And it seems like a usual thing in fantasy. Not just fantasy, but in soap operas that people just don't talk.
Well, you know what they don't talk in, Doctor Who?
No, they don't talk in Doctor Who either.
Not often. No, I mean, Rock.
That's what the MacGuffins are for.
And you know what I've heard, Tuffley, is that McDonald's is thinking about serving MacGuffins all day long.
Oh my God! You just have to find them.
But what point would it serve?
For people who want MacGuffins but are too stoned to get out of the house before 10:30.
Hey. Yeah.
Oh, and then they're mistaken about buying something else.
And then they get chased by spies.
That's right.
Right. Do you know what, Rox? That McDonald's that's on the top of Mount Rushmore is going to get a lot of business. So anyway, I was okay with the turnaround because it, the only thing that to me that it underlines is that.
Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit lonely when I'm sitting and look in my eyes.
You know what? Aaron, what mic are you on?
You know, Game of Thrones could have used Bonnie Tyler because I don't think she did anything for Eurovision.
She really didn't.
No.
Wait, whoa. Was Bonnie Tyler in the last Eurovision?
Yes.
Yeah, she won.
What?
Well, I say mostly Bonnie Tyler. I mean, a lot of it was plastic and silicone.
Oh, wow. She's a cyborg now?
Yeah.
If you did a DNA test, it would still be somewhat Bonnie Tyler.
Yeah, mostly Bonnie Tyler.
Mostly.
That oh my God! Great. You know she'll be like that Doctor Who villain that was Zoe Wanamaker, where she's just this stretched out piece of skin between some bars, and ladies. She'll sing.
Well, that's Cher, but you know.
Wow.
Or it could be Bonnie Tyler.
Could be Bonnie Tyler. You know, if you change the wigs.
I'd like to point out that Cher would make a great Doctor Who villain.
I don't know. It'd be kind of tough. She really doesn't. You know, she was doing some hosting on TCM.
If I could turn and it's back like time.
You know, oh yeah, I really love this show. This movie was really, I mean, come on, can you emote a little bit? You were an actress. But I guess you can't because your skin is so tight.
Don't go overboard now.
Yeah.
Okay, so shall we transition to Doctor Who then?
Sure.
Right, so now I am. This is the worst remix ever. So yes, I've caught up. So real quick, because I know we pretty much already talked about it, but I dug the shit out of the Crimson Horror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Crimson Horror was good. I like that.
That is probably my favorite Mark Gatiss script ever, because the thing about his scripts that I've found is that they've got a really great idea behind them, but they just sort of, there's something in them that's missing that feels like it just falls apart at some point.
Well, it feels like it should be two parts on most of his.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe that's it, but it just, for the most part, like even his Sherlock, his two Sherlocks have just been my least favorite of the three, you know, like, and to be fair, Hound of the Baskervilles is probably the hardest one to fucking adapt because of what they had to do to it. So, to be fair, but even the crazy Chinese circus one from the first season was just, like, not...
Yeah, that one didn't make any sense. Hound of the Baskervilles I thought was okay until, like, the end.
Yeah. Or they had to work the bigger concepts. I think he tries to tackle the bigger concepts. I don't think he's necessarily good at doing it, but he goes for the bigger idea.
But there was Diana Rigg in that one.
Oh, Diana Rigg.
And you know what? She's never really done like a lower class type working type person accent. I don't ever recall her doing that. Am I wrong in that assessment?
Well, I think...
Without checking her filmography, I don't know.
She's naturally posh.
She did a great job as this sort of evangelistic type person.
I wouldn't say she was working class, though.
Well, no, but she was not posh. She was not projecting a posh type accent.
Well, she was of the she was of the area. She was, you know, it was what, Yorkshire?
Yeah, that could be it.
She was just, she was of the local area.
Yeah, I liked that. She did a great job.
And one of the things I really liked about the episode was that she was just a bad guy.
Yeah.
They didn't try to explain it. They didn't try to go back and give her a complicated backstory so that we could feel for her. She's just the wrong hands.
Yep.
She's just a bitch.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I love the daughter. What's her name?
Oh, the blind chick? Yeah, that was pretty. That was a good idea.
That's her daughter, right?
Yeah, that is her daughter.
Oh, oh really? I did not know that.
That is actually Diana Rigg's daughter.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Wow.
You gotta wonder what kind
of oil rig.
What?
Nice. Oh God, that hurts.
Yeah, it does.
I'm sorry.
I know. It's just she. I mean, you know, I love the bit where she says when she says, "Do you forgive me?" And she's like, "No." And it's like, good. Good for you.
That's my girl.
That's my girl.
That was great.
Fuck that bitch. And then she just wails on Mr. Sweet. That was just
And can I just say that this needs to be Crimson Horror should have been the backdoor pilot to the casebook of Madame Vostra, which was the title you gave it, Scott, which is a much superior title than what I was going for. But I fucking love Madame Vostra and Jenny and Strax. I think they're fantastic. They are great. Mm-hmm. And I even if I can't have the Doctor Who Adventure Hour where it's 30 minutes with them and then 30 minutes of the Adventures of Liz 10, then at least give me Madame Vostra, like a reptilian woman going around Victorian London solving crime. Because that's fucking amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if we might actually get that.
Oh, that would make me so happy.
Well, see, if they're trying to shorten the series, that would be a good way to do it.
You know what? I would probably actually be okay with that. So anyway, so that was me for Crimson Horror. Now, you guys talked about Nightmare in Silver as well. Now, because you guys are much more Whovian than myself, was there a lot of trying to go classic Who with this, Nightmare in Silver?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, apart from just the kids, it just felt very like it was trying to call back to something that I didn't understand, if that makes sense.
There were a lot of callbacks to, like, Tomb of the Cybermen and a lot of Troughton, basically the Troughton Cybermen story.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it very much.
I didn't either. I said that I didn't like it at all.
I remember you saying that. And go ahead, Tuffley.
I did. I liked it. Although I liked Rings, and I'm like one of only three people who did. So
yeah, you are.
Well,
yeah. What are you talking about? Sorry, I dozed off there.
Nightmare in Silver.
Oh, it was all right.
Well, here's my problem. It's like it started off great because I knew we were going to see the Cybermen as an automaton playing chess. That's such a great image.
Yeah.
And if I get the chance, I want to ask Neil. It's like, did you start with that? Have you had that image in your head for just like fucking years and you finally had a chance to use it? Because that's how good an image that is, right?
Yeah.
But it just seemed to me that after a certain point, like once you have super speed Cybermen, now is it my thing that once they've upgraded, they all can do it? Or is it just individuals?
I think the patch had to be set out. I think they had to set out the patches.
Yes, the patch.
I think I will give Neil like credit for trying to update the Cybermen because the ones we had with
the Davies ones
sucked. But I don't know. It's just,
really thing... you didn't like those? Man, I'm sorry. I think they were scary because you could lose your brain, Scott, and you can find yourself in a tin can. I thought they were scary. Well, as Davies could be, I thought he really ratcheted up how scary, because the Cybermen can be us. You don't want that.
Well, it's great as people.
Yeah.
Well, I think in the original appearance of like the Pete's World Cybermen, that they were scary, but just the end of series two just completely undermined that the whole. Basically, the Dalek insults, which, you know, that basically just made him a joke again. So,
yeah. But one episode with, you know, where they find Mrs. Moore.
Yeah.
You know, hearkening to, you know, Passage of India.
Okay. First two.
They were scary. Yeah. They were scary.
Well, what they've done with this is that basically it seems like Neil's done with the Cybermen what Grant Morrison did with the Sentinels, which is you have wild Sentinels that will basically... which I fucking loved. You had Sentinels that they would land on the Blackbird while it was flying, pull off pieces of the Blackbird and incorporate it into themselves.
Yeah.
And so now you've got, they can literally just put an implant on you and now you're a Cyberman. Which sounds good.
But it's bored. If you look at it that
well,
way.
That's the thing. It's like, how do you, you've got to do something else with the Cyberman, because we've already seen this with the Borg, with Doctor Who.
Uh-huh.
I mean, well, with Star Trek.
Well, but see, here's my main problem with it, is that the whole Matt Smith, he do the Doctor in different voices, the whole Matt Smith playing the two parts and like spinning around and stuff, that to me just got silly and old after a while.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, that was the other thing. It's like the Cybermen are supposed to be logical, cold creatures. He should have played it.
That was Scott. You hit on one of the points I had exactly. Where did they come up with a personality? You know, if you look at the Davies Cybermen, you know, with that crazy guy that reinvented them, mm-hmm. who was the guy from The Vicar of Dibley. You know, he was the only one with some weird ass personality. But then all of a sudden, it's like you gave them a personality in this one. It made no sense in, like, I guess the canon of the Cybermen.
Well, and again, the reason I brought up the super speed was, once you've got super speed Cybermen, how are they all just not dead? Because I thought that was great, where he walked through at his speed. I was like, why aren't they all doing that? Because to me, it didn't make any sense that they wouldn't. Now, maybe there's a Whovian reason for it, but I just don't get it.
I was thinking the updates got set out in patches or in waves, so not all of them got it at the same time.
Mm.
Well, you know, the thing is, what's really, I don't know, sad is, I think what Neil was trying to do, he was trying to do what they did with the, did you ever see... first season Dalek episode where they reintroduce them?
No.
Well, you know, it's like they really made, like, they reintroduced the Dalek and made it, like, really scary. It's like had force fields. It could fly and do all this other stuff, you know, sort of reinterpreting them to be, you know, scary. And I think Neil was trying to do that. But the problem is the way he went with it was, one, too much like the Borg from Star Trek. And... like you said, there were things like, why weren't they going super speed like all the time instead of just, you know. So, I mean, there were some great bits in it, but there were also things that were like, you know, I don't know. It's just.
And I didn't understand how, I mean, Clara, I'm trying to like, but I didn't understand how. The Doctor goes, what seems to me is like we're missing like an entire season where she, because I know it's revealed in the finale that she's like the ultimate companion or something crazy like that or something. But it's like she knows how to be a companion so well that when he says, oh, well, you're in charge, she actually takes charge. And it didn't seem to me like, oh, well, she's doing that because she's works with kids and she knows how to, you know, lead. It just seemed really... weird. It seemed like really out of character. So
mind, she's got awesome dimples. Don't question it. Just go with it.
No. Aaron, don't get me wrong. I don't question the dimples. All right. I recognize the power of the dimple.
Well, so, see, I
that's
think
all that matters.
One of the things I thought they would explain a little bit was because Clara, you know, was re-downloaded or was in the cloud, that when she mentioned she picked up stuff. In like Bells of St. John, that okay, well, we'd see her like being more easily adaptable to things, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Or really being expecting sense and logic in a Doctor Who episode. Let's go.
I know.
Well, no, don't get me wrong, but my thing is like, for example, there's a lot of stuff in like Crimson Horror, which if you stop to think about it, won't make any sense. Like,
oh no! And the fun part of Crimson Horror is it's supposed to be that way.
Yes, but that's I'm so entertained. Yeah. The moment my brain starts to go there, I go, fuck you, brain. That was great.
Yeah.
And I don't care. But like with this one, I have my brain is awake during the whole thing because it's going, listen, all you gave me to chew on was, you know, an automaton Cyberman with a, you know, a former Ewok inside it, which is neat. But come on.
Although Warwick Davis was badass in that episode.
No, he was great. He is great. He was great on
being Empress of the Galaxy.
Which I just thought of something. A buddy cop movie with Warwick Davis and Peter Dinklage.
You bigoted motherfucker. Just because they're short. I see how it is.
I think that's actually pretty badass.
Thank you.
So what, they're Lieutenants Paul
too,
Williams?
I just don't want to give them the kudos.
So what, they're Lieutenants Paul Williams or something?
Ooh, yeah.
Wow. Nice.
And of course, anyway, the song has to be done.
I would just like to point out, dear God, is Peter Dinklage rocking fucking Game of Thrones. I mean, there is no better actor on that show than that guy. He is fucking killing it every fucking week.
He is.
Have you seen the pictures of him in the pimp suit for the X-Men movie?
No.
Yes.
Like the 70s outfit? Oh, God. And the mustache.
I am both intrigued and a little terrified.
Oh, this should be a quick Google search, hold on.
If you search around for it, there's a picture, and I think it was one of the ones that Bryan Singer released, I think.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, it was Twittering. He's Twittering pictures from the set. And they have Dinklage in costume.
Who is he supposed to be?
Thinking he would be Puck, but like he looks like they're going. He's just like a scientist guy now.
Well, who is it they said he was supposed to be? He was...
I thought he was supposed to be Trask.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Bolivar Trask.
But they haven't come out and said that, but I'm sort of guessing. In the same way that, you know, Cumberbatch wasn't playing Khan.
Well, but I mean, but Aaron, yes, you're absolutely right. He is fucking incredible. Him and Charles dance and just even the scene again with him and Cersei where they're just, you know, not trying to kill each other for once. You know, it's just, and the bit about, you know, every time we get rid of an enemy, we create another one. So, you know, just the weariness of him was just awesome. I mean, he's fantastic.
Yeah. No, he plays it amazingly well. Like, I have to say, but his drunk acting is incredible because it's actually really one of the most, like, difficult things for actors to do is to play a drunk person because it's so easy to be, like, ridiculously over the top or, you know, just like the comedy actor. But it's hard to describe, but he just does it so accurately. And like a little bit like at his wedding where Joffrey's trying to wind him up and he gets the knife and like digs into the table.
Oh, shit.
That was fucking amazing. Oh, man. Shivers down my spine. It was so good.
Well, that and the bit about, you know, at the small council meeting where he's like, you're not going to fuck with Sans anymore.
She's not your play toy anymore.
Yeah. But
my girlfriend cracks up like a fucking evil genius every time that Tyrion Lannister, like, puts Joffrey in his place. She just finds him amazing.
That was great. You just sent the most powerful man in Westeros to bed without supper. Nice.
I love it.
So
what did you think of the finale, Wedge?
Okay. I thought that it was... I thought it was okay. I sort of liked the whole way I didn't really understand what the hell was going on. Because I mean, it was very obvious. There are all the other doctors and everything. So I'm like, so now is what's happened that the great intelligence went back into the past and she spent all her various selves have been just fighting the great intelligence. Everywhere it goes? Is that what's been happening? Because that's almost like the JSA fighting Ragnarok in a pocket universe, to be perfectly honest. But so I guess that's my question. Is that what happened?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if she fought the great intelligence or she just replaced him. It's like there's only can be one person that can.
Well, yeah. I think she just went and saved the doctor. Basically, yeah, all of the times he wouldn't screwed up.
Like, I get the impression that the intelligence was there to, like, guide him the wrong way. And so she went back to guide him the right way. So I don't think there was a direct battle between the two. I just feel like she was kind of like a guardian angel more so than a combatant.
But
although for everybody, who saw season four, didn't that feel a bit turned left to you?
Uh huh.
Yeah. Okay.
But here's my question: is that if that is the case, and she was there, like at the beginning, pointing him to the right TARDIS, how does he in the present not know who she is?
Because she hadn't done it yet.
So in the in the Doctor Who universe, they don't play by those rules, like 12 Monkeys rules.
Well, I got the impression that she was quantum leaping, so that she was inhabiting people's bodies, but you weren't seeing her. She was just.
But if that's the case,
that was her.
If that's the case, then she wouldn't have been. She wouldn't have recognized her in Victorian England. He wouldn't have all that stuff.
That's true. That's very true.
I'm thinking that with some of the introductions where he did actually meet her, they were like, with that instance, like with the TARDIS bay, I think it was just so brief that it didn't really register.
Well, but bear in mind that for Asylum of the Daleks, she was never seen by him.
Yeah.
Right. And that's true. And I'm also saying for some of the other times, I think that, you know, he just met her or just sort of glanced and her face and stuff didn't really register.
I would think if she had, and again, this is my brain having woken up going, what in the fuck is now happening? Because I had no idea. Which is a shame because there was a lot of great stuff there, like the whole the TARDIS is huge because the bigger on the inside thing leaks out when it dies. I'm like, that's fucking awesome. But I'm like, if she has now been interacting with him across his entire timeline, but according to Doctor Who universe rules, now he knows that happened, but he didn't before. Like 12 Monkeys rules, like Bruce Willis said, this has already happened. I can't change it.
But the thing is, I know we kind of theoretically ruled out the quantum leap idea, but at one point she was wearing the Ace costume and she was wearing other costumes from characters that obviously clearly weren't her in the past. So, I mean, I can only go by the assumption that there's some sort of gray area there.
Maybe. That maybe she was a bit of all the companions, you're saying?
Well, inhabited the companions
at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Like for even a couple of hours, she inhabited the companion for a little while. Because, I mean, the Ace costume for the Seventh Doctor, for Sylvester McCoy's Doctor, was a huge giveaway because it's such an obvious costume, like the leather jacket with the buttons and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was kind of hard. That's what gave me the idea that it was more so an inhabitant.
Yeah. They had this thing, and this is before you started watching. The time crash thing, and this is basically where I think all of Moffat's, basically that was Moffat giving you a preview of how he was going to work, basically. Okay. It was basically a mid part that they wrote in between the Christmas special, one of the Tenet Christmas specials, and the end of the third series. And basically it was a story where he interacted with a past version of himself.
Okay.
So the past version of himself, basically there's an incident that happens where 10 solves it, but the past version sees him solving it, but doesn't remember it until he's there with 10.
Okay.
So that's basically, basically the same explanation. So basically he doesn't remember it happening until it does.
Okay.
But I think that's how they've explained like the three doctors and the five doctors. He doesn't really remember interacting with his former selves until
he does.
Well, you know what I mean by like 12 Monkeys rules. If it happened, it's always happened, as opposed to this, which is it doesn't happen until it happens. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, okay. It's not 12 Monkey rules.
Okay. All right. Just checking. That was part of my confusion because I, having not seen that thing many years ago, I wasn't prepared for that.
That's why I was like, yeah, that might need a little bit of an explanation. So
yeah, which is sort of depressing because the thing that I've liked so much about Doctor Who is that I don't need to know stuff in order to enjoy it. Like I was saying about the whole Big Bang, that I didn't need to know who all those various alien races were. I just knew they were bad guys. I didn't need to know. But with this, I feel like I'm hampered by the fact that I don't know all this shit, and as a result, I'm sort of lost.
Well, and, that seems to be a big thing for the series, though, and I think it was him gearing up for the 50th anniversary, is that he was trying to desperately...
He was trying to put callbacks in.
Yeah.
Because there was, like, what I also thought of when I was thinking about how I thought about this series, I seem to remember, what was it, Peter Davidson's first year, which, by the way, Moffat, as you may have not figured out yet, Moffat is quite fond of the Peter Davidson era. They had that thing where they wanted to put like some of the classic enemies and have callbacks. And it was like the year as like series 19 or something where they had to, we have to have something with Omega in it. And we have to have something with the Daleks in it. And we have to have the Cybermen story and we have to have Black Guardian and everything. It's that one season where they tried to shoehorn all the old enemies in to make callbacks and references that made no sense. And that's kind of what I feel like part of this season was, or this half of the series was, just trying to get to that 50th anniversary without confusing everybody, yet confusing everybody.
Well, see, the real issue I kind of have is because the last two seasons haven't been stellar. They've been okay, but nothing more.
Yeah.
And I think it was because he started concentrating on single episodes. In the sense that he has been just trying to do, like, you know, the standalone stuff.
I hate to say it, but I think he can't do Sherlock and this show at the same time. And that's what's been happening.
I don't know if it's just that or if it's just because he's gone for a different attack. Because, I mean, he went from, like, first season being, like, a one big, all-enveloping thing.
Yeah.
Trying to create standalone episodes. That were just like single, like almost like single issue comics in that sense, where you just pick one up and have that one story on its own. I know that he's doing that because that's what old Doctor Who did a lot of. But I don't know necessarily that's the best place for him to be working in because it has been poorer quality since he's tried that.
Let me throw this in real quick. Is that part of the thing about that first season was that it wasn't like everything. It was like most TV series do, which is your A plot is your whatever's happening that episode, but it does tie into the overarching plot. And some of them was just, we've solved the mystery. Ha ha, back in the mystery machine and let's go. And when the mystery machine drives away, there's the rip in time. Oh, it's ominous. But you don't give a shit because you enjoyed the individual episode so much. So there's really not that much difference between the first season and the second ones, except for quality, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the big difference that I think as far as, and this is why I say I think Sherlock has a part to play in that, is that you have to remember Moffat had 2 years to come up with that series, with series 5. He basically had 2 years to put it together.
Well, and
he had 2 years of lead time. He didn't have 2 years of lead time with series 6 and series 7.
Well, and also that's your again, like we've talked about so many times, Tuffley, that's your opening album. That's the idea that you've been, all the ideas that you've been kicking around since you first started watching Doctor Who, being a writer, that's where you used them. And now your sophomore album, you've got to, like you said, turn around with less time and come up with something to follow that.
And you have that weird split in the middle that I think also messed him up to an extent.
Well, I think
I think it was better handled this series as opposed to last series, because
they knew it was coming.
They knew it was coming, and they made a clear break in story so that you didn't really have anything hanging over from Amy and Rory, even though you kind of did. But it was basically a clean break between the end of Amy and Rory and the start of this next thing. So,
yeah, and I think
It felt a little more like a break.
No, it did. I mean, that I think is because they, you know, like I said, they were planning for it as opposed to having it forced on them, which is why you had such a problem with the last season where it completely lost all of its momentum with that Good Man Goes to War,
Hitler.
Yeah, it just didn't work.
Well, it kept the momentum up after Let's Kill Hitler, but then they went to episodes that seemed out of sequence. So.
Well, weren't they actually out of sequence?
They were out of sequence.
Okay, well, there you go.
Because they were, to fit the Neil's, to fit Doctor's wife in, they had to move, adjust stories, so.
Well, and part of the other thing is that you've also, I mean, just look at the Christmas specials, right? The Christmas Carol first episode, the first Christmas special, fucking amazing, okay? Just flawless in its ability to seamlessly inter, you know, intertwine Doctor Who and Dickens. And then you go to sort of trying kind of maybe to do it with C.S. Lewis and not succeeding. And then you've got, you know, The Snowmen, which I guess would make sense again if you knew what the hell they were referring to. But just, I mean, it just seems like he blew his wad way early.
Although, if you look at The Snowman as a Jenny Vaster Strax episode, it works so much better.
Well, I look forward to re-editing it as that.
You're going to do a Phantom Edit, Widge?
Oh, yeah. With all my vast amounts of free time. But here's the number one thing that really bothered me, okay, about the finale, is beyond just the now sitting there going, like you guys were talking about, who the fuck is this guy, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, why the... You were so proud that you got John Hurt.
Yeah.
That you had to say, in introducing John Hurt as the Doctor, and basically go, okay, now you're bragging. That's what the closing credits are fucking for.
Right.
Let those of us who know go, holy shit, it's John Hurt.
Uh-huh.
And then have everyone else go, oh, look at the credits. Who is... Oh, that's John Hurt. Instead, in huge fucking letters, John Hurt is the Doctor.
To me, weirdly, I think they were trying to emphasize the other part of that credit, which is not so much John Hurt, but the Doctor. I think they were trying to drive home, like, this guy, no, guys, seriously, this guy is one of the Doctors.
Well, it's the credit they give every time the regeneration happens. It's the credit they give the new guy, introducing blank as the Doctor.
Oh, you mean another thing that I don't get because I didn't watch the show before. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
Well, no, in fairness, Widge, I mean, I'm a Matt Smith kid. You know, I disliked Tennant and Eccleston. I haven't watched it since I was like in my single digits. But I just felt like when they were giving those credits, I just felt like it was more so like they were trying to nail on the point, you know, no, seriously, guys, John Hurt is a Doctor. We're not just trying to like fuck around here. This is not a thing that we're going to.
Well, I know, but you could have done that in the credits and not been.
Yeah.
To me, it just seemed like bragging. No, don't get me wrong, because John Hurt is something to fucking brag about. Don't get me fucking wrong. I love John Hurt, but I just it took me like, this is your finale, and you're gonna take me out of your big ending to remind me that it's an actor.
I thought it had to do with, you know, the demographics of Doctor Who now, opposed to giving lip service to people, that yes, we love John Hurt, but you know, he doesn't always come to the forefront, you know. So I sort of saw it as, I didn't mind it, but I saw it as like, okay, they had to show who he is for people that do not know who he is.
Well,
there are a lot of people. I'm playing devil's advocate here, and you know.
Well, there are.
Go ahead.
There are a lot of ways you can look. I looked at it. I was like, well, number one, it's a joke on the credit they give the new guy.
Yeah.
That they always give the new guy. The other thing was, I kind of thought it was sort of a kind of a dig at Chris Eccleston.
Ooh.
To kind of go, oh yeah, by the way, this could have been you in this episode.
Ooh.
Because. Literally,
I heard that was originally the plan, that whatever John Hurt is going to be was originally going to be Eccleston. He was going to be the one that, you know, this thing, but not in the name of the Doctor.
From what I understand, or what I've been able to piece together, and Rob will probably debunk all of it, but from what I understand is, it seems like they were the original idea for the 50th anniversary special was going to be the three Doctors, just a redo with the three modern Doctors, with Eccleston and Tennant and Smith.
And that was, I guess, originally the original idea as pitched. But apparently that got altered when Eccleston bowed out. So that's why John Hurt is wearing, you know, Eccleston's coat and McGann's waistcoat. So. But that's why. But that's just me. Bravo probably debunked that.
Why did Eccleston, like, step back so much from this thing? I mean, what is he doing now?
Well,
he's been doing a lot of TV work.
He had such a bad time the first time around, though. I think he was very hesitant.
The hours kind of got to him, and also I think Russell T. Davies pissed him off.
Okay.
Well,
that kind of sounds like what I got from it.
Well, he has been doing, he's been working. I mean, like, the Shadow Line, which, Rox, if you haven't seen, you would fucking love.
Okay. Which DirecTV played again before we killed it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hopefully it should be out on video now that they've played it a couple of times, so.
I don't know. I don't know if it is, but if it is, yeah, see it. It's great. But no, I was okay. I was better with this season than I was with
Six.
The last season. Yeah.
But I think to your point, Wedge, you're right. There are way too many callbacks. And yeah, it's an anniversary year, but I think maybe we're overdoing it with the callbacks. So possibly the next two episodes, I don't know if you're going to get it or not.
Mm.
I hope so. I hope he doesn't go overboard with it, but I don't know.
Well, because, I mean, you'll lose people is the problem.
And I think that's the real that's the real danger. Okay, you can have the callbacks in the 50th anniversary episode, but I think you have to get clear of that by the Christmas episode because you want people to go into the next guy. You know what I mean? So we'll have to see, because if he overdoes it with the callbacks, that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. go ahead.
I'm going to throw it out there. Next guy needs to be a nobody.
Oh, they've already said they're not going to get anybody famous.
Yeah, well, at least Matt Smith really wasn't.
Well, they never really do. I mean, the only reason they Peter Davidson was famous when they hired him, and the only reason they did that was because Tom Baker had been there for 7 years. So, but
did he come in after All Creatures Great and Small, or was that before?
Yes.
Okay.
It's right off Creatures Great and Small, and I think he was doing two sitcoms, but mostly it was All Creatures Great and Small. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He got the job directly after that, and that's why they got him. Was because, well, if we get a famous guy, they won't compare him. They won't immediately compare him to Tom Baker, and they'll like him right off.
Well, and that was my only point about potentially getting somebody who was at least known.
Yeah.
Maybe not huge, but known, because you've got an entire, you know, now the world is watching, right? And they've never gone through a changeover before. They've never had a regeneration. They've never lost their doctor before. And you want to make the transition as painless as possible so that you don't lose people. Because it's like I said this on Facebook, despite the fact that we do accept changes in actors for certain roles, like Batman or James Bond, right? Some of them we don't see that can work elsewhere.
Darren, it worked with Darren.
Well,
it really didn't.
Well, it's not expressly explained in story. It's just, oh hey, there he is, and they just move on.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
But the thing is, as well, is that if you have a famous person come in, people will automatically make snap judgments about whether or not they will like him.
Whereas
with a new, completely nobody, they'll give him a go at least, you know.
Well, now Aaron, here's the thing. I remember seeing when they picked Matt Smith, and people were automatically judging him because they were going and finding his work that he'd done previously and going, oh, he's too young, he's too this, he's too that. So that's going to happen regardless.
Oh, it always does. It always,
it always does.
It's regeneration derangement syndrome or whatever it's called. It's going to happen. And people are going to lose their shit until they actually see him in the role. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe he can do it.
So, but I don't know. you know, I was good with Idris Elba, but if that not, then if not him, then Lenny James, then if not him, whoever the fuck you want, I'm fine.
Although I still think Idris Elba for Movie Doctor, because that's going to happen eventually.
Oh my God, yeah, that'd be awesome.
In a separate continuity?
Why not?
It works for Peter Cushing.
Here's the thing, and Moffat can keep saying it all he wants, but the thing is, Moffat's not going to run the show forever. He's going to leave. And when he does, BBC is going to make a fucking movie. So,
well, they could just make it now.
Yeah.
They don't need his permission.
Stephen Moffat can say there's not going to be a movie all they want, but when he leaves, they're going to make a fucking movie. So...
Well, I don't think he was the one vetoing the movie. I think he was just setting the record straight that there was no realistically movie happening.
Yeah. But
John, it seems like... Are you trying to jump in?
I'm just wondering if I should have been recording any of this.
No.
I may not have pressed unpause.
Are you serious?
Because I'm drunk.
No. At what point?
After the conversation we had off air.
Oh, wow. Really?
Are you serious?
No. Are you fucking with us?
Yes.
Oh, sick!
You almost had me.
Didn't during one of the red nose things, didn't Cora like threaten John? Seriously?
What?
That wasn't Cora.
I'm sorry.
I know it was really, really late when I was watching, but I don't think that was Cora.
Nice. I don't recall any of it, so there you go.
I just remember you told a story about how you came out of the bathroom and Cora was just there staring at you.
That could have been me. I was asleep for a large chunk of that.
I was not really on camera during that whole thing.
No, I'm just thinking next time if John ever comes back, you need to have Cora sick him.
You think Wiz will have him over?
Yeah, that's true.
It's very quaint of you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Especially after giving me a fucking heart attack about the recording again. It's like, well, John's like Loki in the Avengers. Are you ever not going to fall for that?
We've been here for 5 hours. You want to do introductions now?
Oh, sure. We'll do introductions. And why don't we do them? Yep. We'll do them.
Oh my God, it's like a Muppets.
By the way, we would like to say we actually really do love Clutch, and sorry about that.
We're just dicks.
Sorry, guys.
Wait and a on second. That note, are you saying that my imitation is not pitch perfect and beautiful?
Imitation is a sincere form of flattery.
I'm saying that in the possibility that someone from the band might object.
As though they even know.
They do.
Yeah, well, as though they listen. They do.
They listen? What?
Well, listen, Plunge. I think your band is awesome.
Plunge? Wait, what?
I think you're mistaking them for that 70s punk group. That was Clunge. What would be great is that Clunge, Aaron Clunge is the lounge version of Clutch.
Wasn't that the punk band from WKRP?
In Cincinnati.
No, that was Scum of the Earth.
KKBY Bayside. Yeah, that's right. I reference Save for the Bell. What's up?
Screech for life.
So, introductions.
Yeah. I think, Tuffley, you're right. We should do introductions.
Zach Morris is my spirit animal.
And we should do them starting now.
We've seen you staggering out of the work week. But now it's time to buck up, little camper. The weekend is here. This is a needcoffee.com podcast, and we're going to help you the rest of the way home. Stand by for Weekend Justice.
Inside my head says, Rosemary, baby, I got the time.
night of Weekend Justice. It's the Weekend Justice podcast here on needcoffee.com. The number one audio internet train wreck, and God knows we've been proving it just now. We're here in the hall of Weekend Justice with the Weekend Justice League, and I will endeavor to introduce them going from my right to your left. We have Aaron Screech Poole is with us. Hi, Aaron.
I'm going to bed, so good night, everybody.
Oh, good night.
My trousers are brown.
You know what? I'm like a freaking genius is what I am.
You're a drunk genius.
Yeah. 2 months, guys. That's when you get to see me in person. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, baby. I thought you were saying that's how long you had been sober before you decided to drink again.
I wish.
Yeah.
You give me far too much credit.
Well, yeah, I do that.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
You ain't responsible for nothing.
We also have Scott C. is with us. Hi, Scott.
There is nothing better than a drunk Irishman. Am I wrong?
In bed or what?
Well, Scott.
Well, live drunk Irishman.
We've not tried one, but I mean, we'll take your word for it. And we have Rox of Spaz House is with us. Hi, Rox.
I don't know how I can follow up with that.
Well, it's best just to, you know, run away screaming.
Do you know anything about Irishman?
Not a whole heck of a lot.
Well, yeah.
And I'll leave it at that.
That's fine. And we have Tuffley's with us. Hi, Tuffley.
Hi.
Hi. So, and of course, on the board, fucking with everyone's minds is John from the Unique Geek. Hi, John.
I only had one. I wanted more.
Irishman? I'm not surprised by that statement.
What? So.
Yes, honey.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. So.
Awkward.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I know. But that's how it works. So, okay. We've done Game of Thrones. We've done Doctor Who. I'm tapped. What you guys got? I haven't been watching anything else.
Do we care about E3 and Xbox and all that stuff?
I think it's fascinating from the standpoint that maybe Sony might get it right this time.
Okay.
Might.
Okay, Tuffley, here's what I would like you to do. I want you to do me a favor.
Yeah.
I want you to explain what the hell you're talking about like you're talking Doctor Who and I'm John.
Okay, so if we all go back to when the PS3 was launched, these many years ago, Sony insisted, part of the reason Sony insisted on including the Blu-ray player as part of the functioning of the system, which made it overpriced and overpowered for what they were trying to sell, and they didn't have enough games upon launch to make it work. So Xbox basically did their whole backwards compatibility thing and made it work, and that's how they broke through with their audience, which is basically you had the existing titles and the new titles that were kind of slowly trickling out. And what also happened last time with the PS3 was that the PlayStation 3 seemed to be overly complicated for what it actually was, if that makes sense.
Right.
So what's happening now, or what apparently appears to be happening now, what Sony did, I think, early on, Sony did a slight presentation where they said, we have a new system, and made it official. They didn't show what it looked like. They didn't give you any really stat details of what it was. They just showed you some demos. And then a couple of weeks ago, Microsoft did their big Xbox One reveal, and where, you know, they showed you the console and they kind of talked about, ooh, it can do this and it can change your channels for you, despite the fact that they don't have a carrier lined up for it. So they have this great little piece of technology that they don't even know if they can get a carrier for. And then the last couple of weeks, there have been this really convoluted sort of explanation on whether or not you can share games with people, whether or not you can, it'll accept used games, whether it has to be online all the time. Basically, Microsoft couldn't answer a simple question.
Well, and Tuffley.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I just want to follow up on something that you said. that it can change your channels for you. They do know that remote controls have been around for like years, right? They know this.
They can, but this is like voice command. This is using the Kinect as a voice command to basically you tell it what network you want and it goes to that and it already knows what channel it is.
Was there ever any fallout when the Kinect came in and people got wind that like people of Microsoft can look through the other end into your living room?
Well, that's the other part of the scenario, because with the Xbox One, apparently, although Microsoft had to very quickly explain, no, it's not the only thing, it is on all the time, but the only thing it's listening for is for you to tell it to turn on.
Uh-huh.
Which it took a lot of stuttered explanations to get to that.
So says the NSA.
Thanks. Yeah, and Rox, I just looked it up, and I don't think Kinect works with Fallout.
Okay.
But I don't know.
But I have another point. This is an interesting thing, and I know Xbox wanted to do this, the whole thing about each game not being able to, that you couldn't sell or, you know, give to somebody else. So that would make a hurt on the secondary game market, such as GameStop, wouldn't it?
Yes, ma'am.
What they said was, well, at first what they said was, we're not going to let you do used games. And then they backed off of that. And what they said was, we can let you do used games. We will leave it up to third parties, EA, to decide whether or not they want their games to be used. So we still have the DRM and can set it up where third parties can go, well, once you've used the disc, you're done. Because you do have to install the games. But Microsoft then backpedaled and said, okay, Microsoft first party games, you can do that with, and we'll set up the system where you can do that. But it's up to EA, it's up to Ubisoft, it's up to whoever to decide what they want to do with their games. Which, I don't know if that solves the problem any. I think it just creates another problem. Because especially a lot of people complained about, especially on the PC side of the fence, with Ubisoft's games, with the always-on connection, and with SimCity from EA, which was, you know, the authentication systems are always online, and that causes a bottleneck, especially on online games, and that caused so many connection problems when SimCity launched.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see that completely happening, and it doesn't matter. I would imagine that has a little more to do with why they're expanding the servers for live than, you know, persistent worlds. Because I just don't see that many games incorporating that.
Mm-mm.
But here's the other thing. Xbox, Microsoft has been doing the kind of convoluted explanations. Sony basically, and I love this, and I'm leaning towards Sony just alone. I give them points based on the fact that they released a video YouTube.
I saw that.
Here's all you have to do to share things on the PS4. And basically the guy handing the case to another guy.
Right.
So
whether
that's actually true or not on the PS4, I just think that was a lovely stroke of genius that they decided to do
The thing is will that get Sony out of the slump? The New York Times posted a couple weeks ago that there was an American venture capitalist guy that went over to Japan and he was willing to shell out a lot of money for Sony to just start breaking up their components.
Yeah.
You know, such as entertainment, the gaming, and oh, get this. Do you know, here's a bit of trivia. Do you know what the number one moneymaker for Sony is? Anybody?
Licensing?
Blenders?
Insurance. Sony is a big insurance company. They make a lot of their money overseas selling insurance.
Well, that's not too surprising. Well, no. I mean, isn't GM like mostly a car finance company now instead of actually doing cars?
I believe so. Either way, it was kind of interesting that here's a guy saying, hey, you know, in order for you guys to make it, because, you know, when you had the Vita, the PSP handheld, they have not been able to make a handheld that can hold up against an iPhone tablet. Now, I mean, they couldn't go up against Nintendo Game Boy. Could not do it.
Yeah.
You know, even when they had the smaller one where you still downloaded a game, but the game was like almost $60 anyway. It's like, have you guys not figured out Angry Games is $1? Angry Games, you know, Angry Birds is $1. Bejeweled, $2. This is what people want.
I think the Vita games. No, I want my $2. At least the major party Vita games have been at least a little more reasonably priced.
Yeah.
I think they've backed off of that a lot.
Did they? I mean, but you don't hear anything of what anybody's really playing. I mean, I had to laugh when they did that major product placement of the Vita in House of Cards.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, is that a PSP? Really? Oh, my God. That was like the worst product placement ever. It just was.
Well, Kim really likes the Assassin's Creed tie-in for the Vita. And there was a Wipeout Wipeout game that came out for Vita that I appreciated. And there's a Katamari game that's out that I liked.
And, Persona.
What was it? Persona? Persona 4. Persona 4 is the redo of Persona 4 for the Vita is really good.
Is it non grata?
Yes.
But will this make Sony, because Sony is lagged. I mean, when you consider the first, the PSP with the Blu-ray was clocking in at what, $600?
Yeah.
Will this make Sony back into a viable gaming company again?
It'll definitely help. Are you talking about like for the whole company, or are you just talking about gaming?
Well, no, I mean, they again, I can see where this venture capitalist is going. Break it up. You know, so each group can focus on their, you know, it's like a company that really doesn't know what they're kind of do. I mean, look, they lost any headway, you know, when you consider the Walkman really transformed the way we listen to music years and years ago. And they lost, I mean, there's so many innovative things that Sony has done and they have lost. So does this make them... You know, I mean, they're just holding on to what Spider-Man for the rest of their lives, you know, just so they can have hold, right?
Well, insofar as the PS3, admittedly, yeah, they took a bloodbath with it. Mm. But the upshot was they got more Blu-ray players in homes and the Blu-ray format won.
Okay.
Which, you know, Sony was willing to fight the battle of attrition there, but they've lost a great deal to do that. The interesting thing that I'm noticing with the PS4 is that Sony is trying really, really hard not to do anything close to the missteps they made with the PS3 launch. The system clocks in $100 less than Xbox One. It has quite a few of the same features as Xbox One. And according to a couple of outlets, it's a bit more powerful than the Xbox One. As far as graphics power. Now, does this really mean anything? Well, not very much without the games. And neither of the systems are backwards compatible. And particularly in the case of... Now, for the PlayStation Network games, those are going to carry over pretty much in the cloud, I believe, if I've read correctly. I may be wrong about that.
So there'll be plenty of older games from the cloud type of thing.
Yeah, basically the PS3, it's not going to be backwards compatible hardware-wise. You can't put a PS3 disc in a PS4.
Right.
But you will be able to play PS3 games via the cloud. Now, I don't know how – there's supposed to be some sort of fee transfer thing. Kind of like the thing you had to pay when you had all the rock bands and you wanted to have some of the music from the first game carry over into the second game.
Wow. You know, this is – they're like Adobe.
Yeah. Something like that. But at least you're going to have some way of carrying that stuff over, because what they're saying with the Xbox One is that your arcade games aren't going to carry over. Your Xbox 360 games that you've installed aren't going to carry over. They're even doing away with the points, so it's regular currency. So basically, whatever you got, you're going to have to keep it on the 360 because it's not moving over, basically.
Oh.
And basically, I'm not sure if Microsoft has just destroyed their ecosystem or not, but it seems like they did. And Sony is sort of kind of keeping it, which is part of the reason Xbox 360 worked so well, at least in the beginning, was because they had the back library you could get to with the initial Xbox backwards compatibility and the availability of the games via the arcade. Now, here's the thing. And I think what will end up happening on Xbox One will be everybody's going to do HD remixes of the 360 games, like both Sony and Microsoft did in this gen with Fable and a couple of Devil May Cry remixes and a couple of things like that. But it seems like Sony is basically trying to do what Microsoft did last time, which was be underpriced, come in underpriced, and come in at least with some sort of library built in. So. And just simple, easy to use gaming system, which is what the 360 was last time. But well, you know, obviously this is a lot of it is E3 blowing smoke up everyone's asses. So when we actually have consoles in front of us with demos, we'll be able to tell whether the better system is, which system is better. But the thing that gets me about the whole thing is, that if you have, and I've checked the announcements, and I think outside of maybe Forza for Xbox One, that all of the exclusive games or games that are the ones you care about aren't coming until deep into like 2014. So if that's the case, why such the rush to get these systems out when you look at what the year Nintendo has been having with the Wii U? Because they're in the situation where they haven't had any games out. There hasn't really been an influx of software, and nobody's bought the system.
Also, because its name says
Wii. Yeah, well, Wii. Yeah.
Well, all right. It's one of those age-old questions I always have, anyway. First off, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I know people who are full-blown Xboxers, you know, that they have those. And I know at least several people that have had theirs break, you know, Red Ring of Death, and they've had sent it in. How come I don't hear as many people having that problem with PlayStation? Are they better as a console that has not, you know, have the electronic problem?
It's because they don't know how to use the internet, so that's why you can't hear about it.
Yeah, well, there was a problem. Now, you remember they redesigned the PS3,
okay,
the slim version. The fat ones had problems with the hard drives breaking.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which, okay. I have a fat one, but the fat ones had a problem with the hard drives breaking. So,
okay. Wow.
Breaking. Okay,
that was
so
a humble brag.
This brings me back to the whole, and I know the
I've
World Developer Symposium's going on.
Oh, yeah.
You get a lot of people now that have taken on, you know, how to design for your iPad, iTouch, making these garage sort of labs, and they're creating their own games. You know, they're putting in a lot of money, time and stuff, but they're selling games for $1.
Yeah.
I mean, and we saw the demise of what that baseball player's game, you know, they pretty much ruined all of Connecticut or Rhode Island. For his game.
Oh, Kingdom of Amalur?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how much now does, you know, a new system's coming out, how much money does a game company make?
Well, as far as the difference between, like, mobile games are cheaper to produce, theoretically, as opposed to console games, but there's a difference. I mean, yeah, mobile games aren't up to par, particularly in the for puzzle
no,
games.
They're not. But I always wonder at the mathematics. Okay, a game costs $60.
Yeah.
Okay, but you hear the production just like a movie, just like a movie. You know, unlike a movie where you can have, you know, a ton of people going opening night, opening weekend, yeah, and you recoup your money. You don't have that really with a game. I mean, yes, your value, your hourly value is much higher. That's why the game costs like $60.
Well, I think for the movie,
you're,
I'm sorry. With the movie analogy, you have the possibility that more movies can be hits.
Okay.
You don't necessarily, or at least the trend in the last couple of years is that you don't necessarily see that in video games.
No.
Because, every Call of Duty that comes out that does like, and you hear this where they break the records on sales for, you know, for every Call of Duty, there's like 16 other AAA, you know, third party games that tank.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. Square Enix, what was the thing about Square Enix where I don't know what the hell their projections were, but they said that all of their games just completely undersold. Even though, like, Tomb Raider, what was it? The Tomb Raider one is the top-selling version of the franchise is the current Tomb Raider, and that still underperformed for Square Enix.
Oh, okay.
That's just insane. So for the movie analogy work, you know, even and which you probably can figure this out better, or at least from if you look at like stuff like Box Office Mojo or even stuff that I guess you could clarify, but like even like the top five films, unless they're not hideously over budget, they'll at least if you hit at least the top five, it seems like they'll make their money back, right?
Well, first of all, lots of things are hideously over budget. So there's that. But I mean, even something like, well, I mean, it depends on what it is. It's like, for example, The Purge, which was,
oh my God, that was like weekend. Made for what, $3 million?
Something,
something like that. And it made a shit ton of money.
It made 40.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just domestic.
Yeah.
So,
well, they made the analogy on Monday morning that with horror films, you can do them relatively cheaply.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you look at all of the Runaway films, they're all horror films. Blair Witch is a number one, you know.
Well, the only name in that film was Ethan Hawke. So right, that's all they had to do was pay Ethan Hawke, and that was about it.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I love Ethan Hawke, but he's been doing a lot of films, so he's probably pretty cheap to get these days.
Yeah.
He may have done it for cost just because it might be fun.
Well, that's true, but
Ethan Hawke's been, this is like the second one of these that Ethan Hawke has been that did well, he's been in, so maybe he gets something off the back end.
That's quite possible. But no, I mean, horror is huge because you, not only do you do it for cheap and then you make your money back domestically, but then you've got video sales and then you've got foreign sales. Mm-hmm. And these things sell really well overseas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, horror is the genre to shoot for because it's just so cheap to do. Even if you want to do something like a, you know, a zombie flick or a vampire flick or whatever, you can do it for next to nothing.
And just because you have no one in it,
because
there's an audience for it.
I mean, because just look at World War Z. That's they paid their graphics department next to nothing.
Yeah, and you see what that got them.
Well, but they still did it.
Yeah, I know. Oh, God. Well, the other thing, Rox, is that, I mean, a lot of games, the smart gaming stuff, like you're talking about the $1, $2 games.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have the free, it's a freemium model where you have the free version with ads and then you pay to get rid of the ads. And then you have in-game purchases so that you're like, oh, I don't want to, I could play this for like 5,000 hours and get enough points to do this thing that I really want to do. Or I could just give you $8 and call it good. Oh, I'll give you the $8, you know?
I just ran out of lives and I really want to keep playing and I can just spend $5 to get more lives.
Yeah. Or you want to buy the Uber set of armor, Infinity Blade.
So, but I mean, it's, but it is, to go back to what you're saying, it's, it depends on the film as to when you, where you hit and if it's good or not, because yeah. You can have a film that hits number one at the box office, but the fact that it gets knocked off the next weekend.
Yeah.
Can mean that it, you know, doesn't even break even.
Or you could have something like a situation with Battleship, particularly where RPGs come in, where they are far more popular everywhere else than they apparently are here, right. Except for non-Final Fantasy games. Non-Final Fantasy RPGs seem to do a lot better everywhere else than they do in the States. So you'll have some, it's the same, it's like what Battleship did. The only reason Battleship's a hit, because everybody else went and saw it.
Mm-hmm. Let me see. Yeah, I mean, you're right.
Tanked here.
Yeah, well, yeah, which is sad when you consider $65 million tanking. But yes, I take your point.
Yeah,
so but here's the crazy thing. It had a production budget, according to Box Office Mojo, of $209 million. That's like Waterworld money. Where the fuck was all that money? I didn't see it.
It was on the back end.
And you're starting to see that, especially, you know, with all the cutbacks EA's done. And EA spent a lot of money on talent for games. They had had that point where, we're throwing millions of dollars at games, and the millions of dollars you're throwing at games for NBA Live really, really doesn't show at all.
No.
You know, EA is kind of paying the price for that. And the other thing...
I thought EA was negligent on actually paying some of their coders and stuff.
Well, those suits are pending. And really, they overpaid for the sports licenses.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, if anything, that's where your real money is.
Yeah, what really ended up happening was EA was trying to take, 2K out of the sports market by basically buying all the franchises, buying up the licenses. And they overpaid for pretty much everything.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yes.
So... But yeah, you're starting to get into that area where games budgets were getting into like movie territory.
It's getting like that for board games.
Yeah.
Just because, my friend and I were looking at an article where, you know, right now, Fantasy Flight, which is a really great company, and they produce some really good board games, spent a lot of money on Star Wars.
Yeah.
For their board games and stuff. So, you know, their major budget is just buying the license from Disney.
And have you seen Indie Game the movie?
No. Uh-uh.
There's a great documentary that came out, I believe, last year called Indie Game the Movie.
Mm-hmm.
That followed a couple of the guys who developed independent games that were released on different varying platforms. And whether or not some of them got released or not, or... You know, I think one of the ones they followed was the guys who did Super Meat Boy.
Oh, wow!
Those were two of the people they were following in the film. Mm-hmm. But it kind of did a really good explanation on, especially as far as if the example I was giving about the Call of Duty thing, where you know for every Call of Duty there's X number of AAA games that bomb. Indie games for like every Minecraft, there's, you know, lots, and there's like 20 games that bomb and they release at the same time. So it's much harder. It's easier to develop as an indie,
mm-hmm.
but it's much, much harder to, it seems like, or at least from what it appears to me, it seems much, much harder to break through. Especially
well, is it also for an indie game like the bar lower since they don't have the overhead that some of these like major corporations have developing games?
I know, but you still run into how to market. Marketing is other than licensing, Scott. Marketing is like a really tough thing to break into as well.
What was the thing with Steam recently where a couple of guys were trying to They had gotten a deal with one of the game companies, and then they had signed with Steam first, and Steam sort of stuck them to having to stay on Steam, or they're
still. Oh yeah, it's been a while since I read that, but it's something convoluted like that. I mean, distribution too. It's like if you're an indie comic book writer, it's always tougher doing anything independent. So please, people, if you want to, you know, come to me and I'll solve all your problems. No. Doing anything independently. It's like if you're an independent comic book person, you have to find somebody who will distribute your comic book, which means diamond. You know, it's this devil, you know, it's devil in the details type thing. You know, what bad person are you going to sign with just to get, you know, somebody to distribute, you know, your game? It's the same thing with like a video game.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to do a console or an independent game for Apple, it's your game, but it has to go through, you know, a review. It has to go through this whole thing. You pay them. What is it? Is it
30%.
Apple gets 30% off the top of everything.
Right. And the thing is knowing licenses. Get this. If you license the game, you want to do a Star Wars game, they get, you know, the licensing fee. Plus, they're going to get percentage off of you, whatever profits you make.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's almost like, why do you want to even bother? You know, what kind of money will you make? You know, either it's a really good game or it's a real shit game. You know, you're stuck blowing a lot of money just to get your product close to production.
Well, and a lot of the thing, especially with the consoles... the consoles, especially with, I think, PS4 and Xbox One, I think they're probably going to try to lean on the arcade and the indies a lot in sort of their lean opening software period. Because you saw that a little bit with the Xbox One announcements.
Well, they're going to have to do that just because there's no games in the pipeline.
There's no games in the pipe. And I think... what Sony and Microsoft will do that Nintendo didn't have is basically people actively developing stuff for the system. As far as their arcade, as far as their online games, because indie developers really didn't want to do anything for Wii U. And a lot of the stuff, even a lot of the stuff that's available for Wii U is basically carryovers from Virtual Console from the Wii, which is basically, you know, yes, you can buy Galaga on yet another device, which admittedly, though, I would probably do. But guilty as charged. But yeah, and you'll notice a lot of people dropped. What is it? Ubisoft and EA dropped Wii U titles that they were developing. So it's important to get out there and have games, which I think both Sony and Microsoft will do. But it'll be interesting to see. I don't even think pre-orders are going to be a good stat to go by, because if I remember correctly, Sony had, what was it? Sony won pre-orders last time and they still lost, so to speak.
Right.
Are interested in pre-ordering the Xbox One or the PS whatever 4, you can do that through needcoffee.com/Amazon.
I was getting there, but...
Oh, I'm sorry. What? I didn't know.
I was getting there. I was going to say it at the end. But, nah, it's okay. But it's going to be interesting. I don't even know if you can tell by the pre-orders, because I don't know. I would think Sony would have the edge with the price, at least on pre-orders. But, you know, it's going to end up being about the games and the proximity of basically the shit you caring about when it actually comes out, as opposed to when you're actually going to buy the system. It'll be interesting to see. And it almost feels like Microsoft is intentionally pricing the Xbox One to a point where, like, okay, all of the stuff I care about isn't coming out until fall of 2014, when the first price drop's going to happen. So, I don't know. It seems like they're pricing themselves intentionally so people will wait for the price drop that'll probably happen a year later. So, I'm curious. I think Sony's got, at least Sony's currently winning the PR war.
Oh, okay. You know, on a side note, since we're doing Greek Cafe, a friend of mine pointed out, get this, for you people who play Munchkin, Steve Jackson reported in 2012, they made over $7 million on Munchkin alone, over which in 2011 they made like they made a $2.5 million increase from the year before. This means that they are actually creating more Munchkin, so Widge, the pile will get higher at your games. And they're actually producing more cart, you know, that they're in more different languages too. So as far as a fun little game, Munchkin hands down, I mean, you can play with a bunch of friends, takes like, well, depending on how many people are playing, you know, anywhere from an hour to, I don't know, 5-8 hours later, something like that. So it's kind of cool because Munchkin actually started off like, I think it's like an offshoot from the Steve Jackson games. You know, it was like a little card game that they came up with, and it's done really, really well. And it's done really well for the artist, John Kovalik, who's done almost all the artwork for Munchkin. So, there's hope for, you know, indie, well, Steve Jackson games is an established thing, but, you know, they're known for their stuff, but yet they sneak in a game, you know, that's terribly fun and stuff. So
he's cultivated the audience is what
he has. Yes. Yes.
And I think if you look at that, it reminds me, Minecraft reminds me a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, I mean, or kind of the following that's come up on Minecraft reminds me a lot of the goodwill that Steve Jackson Games has. So, mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Another game. Oh, so Fantasy Flight, I guess, picked up. Get this, Cyberpunk or Netrunner.
Yeah,
which is I'd like to see. So anyway, so gosh, it's 11. Should we?
Gosh, it's 11 o'clock.
Yeah, it's we're...
Do you know where your children are?
Well, Rob was here, but he has now disappeared.
He ran off from the gaming
area. Scared Rob off,
I guess.
What the hell?
It's all the electronics. That's why I brought in a card game to talk about.
Oh my god. All right, so we should move to recommendations since it's about that time. And therefore, who wants to go first?
I need a couple of minutes. I've been talking a lot.
That's okay. Then I vote for Scott.
Okay. I picked up, well, I think my recommendation is going to be, I'm going to probably mispronounce his first name, but Ian M. Banks recently, passed away.
Yeah.
And he did these remarkable, you can kind of call them space opera, called the Culture Novels, where essentially it's the far future. There's a civilization that spans galaxies and, you know, they have a wonderful life and they want other places to have it so that, you know, they kind of poke other civilizations in the right way. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And it's like Star Trek done right, almost. You know, it's like, I mean, it's the vastness of these stories. I mean, it covers, you know, whole galaxies, but they're still very personal because these people that, you know, are trying to make their own way in these, you know, with like hyper intelligent AIs running around and massive, you know, structures that span whole planets and stuff. And I'm, like I said, I'm doing a very bad job explaining this, but they really are amazing. Just look up. His first name is Ian Banks. Just look him up on Amazon through Need Coffee and check out his stuff. I mean, the books are long, but you really, once you get into them, you really don't notice. And I think that's going to be it for this week because I can't talk. Dun dong.
Really?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
All right, I'll go next. I only got one, two. It's summertime. So, time for summer reading. That means reading a horror book.
Well, of course.
And the one I chose is NOS, NOS 4A2, for those that would like to know, Nosferatu by Stephen King's little son, Joe Hill. And he really does show his chops that this guy can write. For anyone that read Heart-Shaped Box, his premiere book, he's really, really good. It's the tale about a young girl named Victoria McQueen, and she goes off and finds adventure on a bicycle. Not only it's a Raleigh, tough a BMX bike. Never really was a big BMXer, but it's a Raleigh. Anyway, she could do the whole by riding her bike, venturing into another world type of thing. And the Nosferatu is the vanity plates for the villain of the story, Charles Manx, who has a Rolls-Royce Wraith, 1938 Rolls-Royce, that he goes around and kidnaps children, and he's got a henchman and everything. It starts out summer, it's summertime, and it's a lot of fun. Well, it's a horror book, but there's a certain author for people that have certain interests. You know, if you like, you know, baseball or something, there are certain authors and writers that can write about an interest, you know. And oddly enough, Joe really can write on what it's like to ride a bike, and as a cyclist, that sort of grabbed me. So that's really, really kind of cool. I'm going to throw out a thing on, Dan Brown's sort of an update on Inferno. Apparently he wants to try to write a book like what Margaret Atwood would write. And it just is funny. It is. It's like, oh my God, he's trying to be like Margaret Atwood. No, no, it doesn't work that way. It's just the ending and the science involved. It's like Michael Crichton. It's like, really, really that fast, huh? Amazing. It's almost like you don't know what science is there, Dan. Also,
well, he obviously doesn't know history, why should he know about science? Well,
yes, he does not know about history because I'm okay. It was so funny. I'm riding my bike and I'm listening to it on Audible, and he mentions that the Nazis they perfected eugenics. Dan Brown does not know science or history because eugenics actually started here in the United States.
By the way, doesn't Dan Brown have a show on the History Channel?
No, that's actually Brad Metzler.
Yeah, the guy who ruined DC Comics. Doesn't he have a show on the
History Channel? Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, that's my update. You know, Dan Brown's trying to be Margaret Atwood, and it's failing.
Rox, but I think I just pitched Dan Brown getting a show on the History Channel.
Oh dear. But you know what? Somebody pointed out, you know, now with this book that people are flocking to Venice because it's dealing with Dante and stuff. I posted that I'd like to see people going to Venice and reciting Dan Brown verses.
Wait a minute.
Instead
Venice?
You know, Dan Brown.
Florence and Venice, that's where these play. Florence, Venice, and Turkey are the three places in this
book. Yeah, let's see people go to Turkey.
Dan Brown giving Venice the tourism that League of Extraordinary Gentlemen just couldn't do.
Yeah, that or, let's see, Florence had, you know, Hannibal. They hated that. Those people were like, oh my God, that horror film is here. Holy crap. Yeah. Oh, now, Madonna.
Speaking of Audible, did you listen to Nosferatu on Audible?
No, I'm actually reading it. There's certain books. It's sort of funny. I can't tell you how I pick. I like Terry Pratchett books. I like Audible because I like the people doing it. You know,
well, I will.
Stuff, but I'm actually reading it.
Well, for Nosferatu, I just finished it. They got Kate Mulgrew to do the book.
Really? Well,
and she was amazing.
It's a female protagonist, so really.
Well, true, but oh yeah, and it's a little weird because you know, the little Trekkie in me is going, is Captain Janeway saying fuck?
Huh.
But she does a great.
Does it? Okay.
Oh,
did
yeah,
did you like it? Because I'm like right in the middle of it, and I really like it. It reminds you of kind of like a single person, like it.
It almost reads like almost like an homage to his dad's work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you got the evil car, you got like, you know, the transition between the childhood and the adulthood, and stuff like that. And there are even little shout outs. There are little Easter eggs for his dad's work.
Well, oh, you know, yeah. There is a point there. I mean, because, you know, what makes it better would be fewer people.
Yeah. Yeah. and the thing is I found out that in, what is it, 11/23/63, that book, that Joe helped his dad write the ending.
Yes.
And I honestly liked that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like one of the Stephen King books that I'm like, and this was before I, you know, found this out. I'm like, wow, that is a great ending. And then it was like maybe a month later I found out that Joe helped out. I'm like, that makes sense. It was a great ending.
Yeah.
So I'm done. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say also on the audio thing, they had like at the end a little not interview, but Joe Hill himself talked about writing the book and stuff. And it is so funny. He has such a thick New Hampshire accent. It's
Maynard
very...
accent.
Well, that's true. That's
Maine.
True. Mm-hmm. But no, like I said, if you are one to listen to audio books, this one definitely, she really puts a lot of emotion and a lot of acting into the book, which really, you know, isn't distracting. It really adds to the story.
Yeah, certain people can really do that. The Dan Brown one's just hilarious. It's just like it's the guy that they've got it. He's trying. He really is trying. But anyway, Dan, it's eugenics. They perfected it. They didn't invent it. Just saying. And you're no Margaret Atwood.
But who is?
True.
Margaret Atwood.
Well, okay then.
Oh, and Venice does not need any more tourists.
What?
I don't All right. know.
Hey, Rob's
I'll,
here.
I'll explain later.
Yeah, I know.
Sure.
Lovely. All right, so.
I know.
Do we still have. We lost Rob again.
Did we lose him again?
Rob.
Yeah.
It was the talk about Margaret Atwood, probably.
Or Dan Brown, actually, probably.
Well, yeah.
Margaret Atwood, Dan Brown, E3.
Oh, my God, they're talking to Dan Brown. I don't know these people.
Yeah.
All right, so, Tuffley, what you got?
All right, well, we'll start with Free. I haven't been here in a while, but I'll narrow it down. We'll start with Free. In honor of David Byrne and St. Vincent hitting the road again, which you're welcome. Hitting the road again, they have a new EP out called Brass Tactics, which you can grab from lovethisgiant.com, and it's free. So grab that. It includes a couple of remixes from the Love This Giant record, a couple of live tracks, including a really great version of Road to Nowhere, and a new track that just didn't make the Love This Giant record. So check that out, and it's free. So you can get that at lovethisgiant.com. Let's see. Queens of the Stone Age, Like Clockwork. Love that record. Besides the fact that, you know, the guests on it, it is a really, really, really good record. If you enjoy rock records, as many people do. You could also check out Camera Obscura's got a new record that is full of peppy, not very cheerful, peppily depressing songs. It's called Desire Lines, and it is very much like the previous record, My Modeling Career, but it is very good work from them. Let's go with Mikkel Cronin's second album called MC2, which is really, really good, sort of garage kind of almost folky garage, if that makes any sense. There are a lot of guitars, but there are also a lot of acoustics. And it is a very good, loud, soft, loud album in kind of the mode of like the old, like the first couple of Pixies records and like the first couple of Nirvana records. So that's very good to check out. Mikkel Cronin, and it's called MC2. And last but not least, if you didn't catch it earlier, Venture Brothers Season 5, Midnight Eastern on Adult Swim. Check it out. It's very funny. And you can also grab a season pass. And the T-shirt club's back. You've missed your chance to subscribe to the whole kit and caboodle, but there'll be new T-shirts that pop up every week of the season, which I think we're all in this room very familiar with. So check that out at astrobasego.com. Done.
All right, cool. All right, John, what you got?
As per usual, I really don't have anything. I will just tell you stuff that I have bought recently by using the needcoffee.com/Amazon link. The most recent major purchase, and hopefully the money has gone to Need Coffee's server fund, is the ProForm Hybrid Trainer. It's actually an elliptical and a recumbent bike all in one. It does the job of both fairly well. The biggest hiccup for me is that I am, 6'2", and the stride length on it, because it is trying to do two things at once, is only 15 inches, which I do run with. When I do run, I run with my group has a lot of shorter women in it, so I'm used to kind of almost shuffling my feet when I run, so it's not that big of a deal. But if you are, say, over 5'10", probably it might be a little too short for you. But the bicycle part works really well as well. So for the price, it is really good. And by the way, buying it through Amazon, I was researching this product, and I couldn't decide whether or not I wanted to take the risk on the 15-inch stride or not. And so I went to, yes, exactly. And so then I went to the corner and paid an extra $50 and found out that I do like 15 inches. No, that the, what do you call it? I went to Sports Authority, of all places, and they wanted, they actually had the device there. So I window shopped there, tried it out, and decided to buy it on Amazon, which I was going to do anyway because they ship it to my house for free if you have Prime. But the beauty is it's half the price on Amazon than it is at Sports Authority. So take that, Sports Authority. Let's see. What else have I purchased recently? I got a Star Wars double wall ceramic travel mug. It's actually my second one of this particular design, because the first one met an ill fate in the bathroom. When it fell off the counter, off the counter as I was leaving work, because I stopped in to take a little potty break, put it on the counter, went to go wash my hands, and as I went to go reach for the paper towels, I hit it and tried to stop it with my foot, but that only made it more angry as it shattered into a million pieces on the ground. But it's an awesome, awesome mug. I like the ceramic double wall mugs because they feel like regular coffee cups, but they have and they keep the beverages hot inside better than other carrying mechanisms. It comes with a nice little travel lid, which is made of silicone. Those are my recommendations. I bought them through needcoffee.com/Amazon. So should you.
Excellent. Hey, is your bike thing? That's a stationary bike.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a.
Did you buy a real bike yet?
I have a real bike. Yeah.
Have you been using it?
Not really.
For your foot or whatever.
No, not really.
Don't worry.
I've got a stationary one, and I can watch. I can't watch TV when I'm out driving on the road. But I can when I'm sitting.
You can't, yeah, it's not advisable.
Well, I did once, but that's why I had to come back inside.
So, what do you watch when you normally?
The last couple of things I've been watching, rewatching some Portlandia. I get Netflix basically. I just start watching.
Yeah. So you like binge watch stuff?
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, has anybody watched or kind of? Slow
Arrested Development?
Yes, that's what I was trying to get to.
Yes. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet because I'm trying to catch up on like two other shows.
Oh, so nobody else has watched it?
I didn't really catch it the first time, so I'm like,
you're part of the problem.
Don?
Yes?
That's not news.
Oh, okay. Well, sometimes it's good to just reiterate things.
Okay.
What did you think of it? Because is it?
I liked it. I know that a lot of people like hammered it because they were like, "Well, it didn't have as much. It wasn't just like the other ones." It's like, well, it's been 5 years.
Although the video editing software joke was awesome.
Oh, it is. But the thing is that I thought it was rather ingenious writing, considering that they didn't have all the actors at all the times, and so they had to work around kind of. That limitation, and the way that they worked around it was brilliant. And Netflix works out perfect for this because when you watch it, you probably are going to binge watch it. So the joke that was like three episodes ago pays off. You know, usually they were making lots of jokes that were in one position and paid off several episodes later. It's all fresh in your mind. If you had to wait a month before you finally got to the punchline. You probably would not enjoy it as much, but I know that several people gave it a lot of slack flack is what I meant to say, flack on the interwebs. I personally thought it was really funny. I thought it was really enjoyable, and I thought it was very brilliant. I don't know what everyone was expecting. Of course, it's not going to be the same as it was before. It's a completely different time, and you don't have everybody together, and it's it's been. 5 years? It's been 5 years, right?
Yeah. Well, something I know like when they interviewed Horowitz about it, he said they were actively trying to play with the form
a little bit. I thought they did a great job.
Yeah. Knowing that they were in a format where it could be either binged watched or watched separately. So depending on how you watch it is how you, whether or not you get the jokes or not. I'll figure that out when I actually start to get into it. But haters gotta hate.
That's all it is. Haters gotta hate.
I will say this. I was impressed with House of Cards. I've heard kind of mixed reviews about Arrested Development. But I do like the fact that we may get a season 5 out of that after all. So.
Okay. So that's what I was going to ask you about. So they probably will make another season of Arrested Development then.
Netflix really wants to. I think from the last thing I saw with Horowitz was he said he was too tired to answer that question right now. So because they had literally just finished it when they posted it. So he doesn't even know yet. I think they'd all still like to do the movie because it would be easier to afford to get them all together. Right. But they could certainly do another season like this.
I frankly don't. I know that there's been a lot big push to get the movie made or whatever, and that people want to see the movie. I don't get what the movie gives you. I think it works better in its 30-minute format. I can't imagine that a movie would make much sense.
Yeah, it's the same argument they always had with Python, where they were talking about the problems they had out every movie outside of Holy Grail was that. It all turned into a series of sketches and they couldn't figure out how to make the narrative work, which is how I kind of feel like Arrested Development would be. It would just be a bunch of kind of loose sketches around some kind of thin narrative. And I think especially the narrative for Arrested Development has to be built up. And I don't think it, I don't think you could get there in 2 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. I just don't think you could get there in 2 hours. So I would much rather have a season five than
right. If they approach it as sort of a passion project and not necessarily, yeah. you know, we have to have everybody here all the time, everything. I'd be curious to hear what your response is after you've watched it, because yeah. again, it is different. And, you know, Michael isn't necessarily the center of the entire story like he was for the network television stuff. But
yeah.
but I thought that it worked well. I thought that the fact that they gave everyone sort of their own storyline was nice. But then again, I also, you know, I enjoy alternate timelines in comics, too. So, you know, it all kind of works yeah. towards it for me. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've just got to get through. I just finished catching up with Misfits because apparently that's going away. And I think I'm right about to start Arrested Development. So we'll see.
All right, cool. Yeah, but you can't buy that on Amazon like you can buy the other things that we've mentioned here.
Well, not yet, although House of Cards is available for pre-order.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. So Widge, how about
it will
that?
Be at some point.
Widge?
Yeah, yes. I'm just wait. Are you done?
I've just been putting people to sleep all night, man.
What? What's that? Huh?
Shut up.
So, all right, fine. My recommendation. I will recommend listening to it in audiobook form, but I can see where it would probably actually work best as a book because it's very dense. It's a book called What If, and they, not the comic. And it's basically, they've gotten a bunch of military historians to talk about what would have happened if certain events had gone differently. My two favorites thus far are, what if Hitler, instead of going apeshit and trying to attack the Soviet Union, instead took the oil fields of the Middle East? Which
oh,
is
that would have been
bad.
Yes.
yes. And the other one I really liked was, what if the Mongols had taken Europe?
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. The best part of these is where they go, that means know this, know this, know this, know this. With the Mongols, when it was like, yeah, they would have, you know, taken out the Vatican. They would have taken out this. That would have been no Christianity. You would have had no Reformation. You would have had no this. No, I was just like, holy fucking shit. So it's good. And some of them are longer than others because there's more stuff to go over. Some of them are just quick little nuggets of here's why this would have been interesting. But it's all over the place. I mean, everything from, you know, what if the conquest of the Aztecs had failed to, you know, what if the Japanese had conquered Hawaii in World War II to just all kinds of stuff. So it's pretty insane, especially when you think, I mean, they make the case for, yeah, this you were this close to this happening. So it's crazy stuff. So yeah, it's called What If? And there's two volumes of it. I'm on the first volume right now. But it's crazy stuff. And I can imagine where you know, you gamers would really appreciate this because it just seems like it's rife with it's like Kenneth Haidt wept is what it is, really. So but there you go. And there you have it. So
and there you have it.
And there you have it. So I think.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, God. So I think.
There was such enthusiasm when we started.
Yes.
Oh, God. Yes, but that was 190 what episodes ago?
We're getting close.
I know. We're getting close to 200.
Oh, God. We're going to have to do something for 200, aren't we?
We'll dust.
Oh, wait.
Scott and Glitter.
For 200, don't we send Charles Xavier into space?
Wow.
This would be 196.
There you go, Tuffley. Just reel them all in and put them to sleep.
Oh, yeah. Send an Xavier into space. Thank you very much.
Well,
I say we dust Scott and Glitter.
And how would that be different from any other time?
That's Thursday.
Well, you know, we could do it live.
Oh, God.
And you can go, oh, you got it in my eye.
Okay, I'd like to. Whoa, he said that before.
No, I'm usually pretty careful about that.
But you wear goggles?
Oh, wow, that's going on.
No, I just, you know, aim it away.
Okay, I don't know about you, but I have no idea where anything is going at that point in my life.
Where was the glitter during the E3 talk, man?
Wait a minute. You don't know where things are going. Did you not know that Scott wasn't aiming it properly? Never mind. So I do think that I've written down, hopefully I'll remember, that episode 200 needs to be called simply Sending Xavier into Space.
Is the International Space Station glitter friendly?
No, it's not, Scott.
Oh, we could shoot Gary Glitter into space. That'd be better.
Ooh, yay.
I would be okay with that.
Why do you want to know about the International Space Station there, Scott?
Well, you're shooting people off into space, and I'm just wondering, you know, since he's in a wheelchair, is the International Space Station ADA compliant?
No, Scott, it's no big deal, because this is when Xavier was in his new cloned body after the Brood.
Uh-huh.
Scott, you don't know what they're talking about, do you?
God, no.
You know, you could at least say, uh-huh, with conviction.
I'm too tired.
All right.
He's tired. He's tired of conviction with conviction.
I regret nothing.
Yes. Well, I think I think on that particular bombshell, we should wave goodbye to another episode of Weekend Justice. And I think just like every time that we convene here in the hall, we should take a moment and look at one another and simply say, safety goggles.
Safety goggles.
Safety is important.
Safety goggles.
So long, farewell, all feeders, and good night. There we go.
Better safety than goggles.
Better than a welding visor.
Goggles of safety.
Goggles of safety. I think we need R. Kelly now.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't.
No, let's not play out on R. Kelly. Run away.
No, in the closet for me. No, thank you. Give me just a minute while I clarify.
Hi there. Many of you know me as the half-assed engineer John on Need Coffee's Weekend Justice podcast. But what most of you don't know is that before I was internationally known by tens of people, I was a patient at the Sleep Deprivation Institute, known as NeedCoffee.com. NeedCoffee.com has provided me and many of you with hundreds of hours of therapy through engaging rants, dreamcasts, reviews, contests, news of the offbeat and cool, and of course, more information about caffeine than was really necessary. Why, without Need Coffee, I might have actually seen Starship Troopers 4 bugging out. Thank you, Need Coffee, for saving me from that fate. Now, all this goodness does come at a cost, so the fine folks at Need Coffee are asking for your help. Please head over to needcoffee.com/memberships to learn what you can do to keep this invaluable resource alive. Your contribution not only will allow for more great content and more chances to win free shit, but it might just save a kitten. So as you sit there, listening to this podcast, this free podcast, sipping on your $8 Café de Frou-Frou, think about what you could have done with that money instead. Sure, you could have donated to some worthy cause, or you could keep Need Coffee and kittens alive. Your choice. Visit needcoffee.com/memberships for more details. Oh, crap. Did I record that?
And here's Dakota.
That is wrong. That is sick and wrong. I'm just going to say that right now.
I did that on a whim.
I knew we'd find that. I knew we'd find that tone. We couldn't get to it 2 hours ago, but now we're here.
Oh, you know, it's so late and everything.
Hey, and you know what? She was sloshing that liquid with the conviction.
I know.
There you go, with conviction, Scott.
That's right, Scott. That's how you slosh some liquid.
Yeah. Don't get it in their eye. And there's the coda.
Mr. Pop, you're peanut butter.
Hey, what? Wait, what?
And here's Dakota.
Yeah, that's right. I referenced Save by the Bell. What's up?